Radio.com.
It's time for the most knowledgeable and informative show based around the world of professional wrestling. Thought we weren't supposed to use that word anymore. OWW Radio, with your host, Mr. Personality, Alan Wojcik.
It's not my fault I happen to be charismatic.
Along with the loudmouth assassin, the Spud Guy.
I just act that way to get chicks, dumbass.
The resident Aussie, Mace.
I am not going to lie to these people just because it makes them feel good.
Guest starring Kevin Scott as Jamal.
What it is, my nizzles, I got chili for shizzle!
What? It's time for OWW Radio, live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
You got the touch. You got the power.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Our phone number, as always, is 267-297-1397. That gets you directly into our program. You can also Skype Sir Rockin if you're a part of the Skype network. This is episode 100 of this series, and we'll talk all about that way later on down the road. We'll talk WWE. We'll talk TNA. We may get into some politics later on. Spug and Mace are both here. Kevin Scott may be joining us later on, depending on his health. But we're going to cut right to the moment a lot of fans have been waiting for. This guest came very short notice, so thanks so much to Sean Oliver and his staff at Kayfabe Commentaries. If you live in the tri-state area of New York, that's New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, even if you live in Pennsylvania, this Saturday, if you're a wrestling fan, you need to get to the Crown Plaza Hotel in Monroe, New Jersey. This Saturday, it starts at 9 a.m. It ends at 3, but you will run into a humongous list of stars that are going to be a part of Legends of the Ring 12. It is a pro wrestling fan fest. You can go to legendsoftheRing.com, all one word, no spaces. But we're honored to have someone who not only was a part of WWE in recent years, the early portion of the 90s forward, he was an executive with WCW. He has a book that we will mention in a few moments. He's been a part of a Kayfabe Commentaries DVD. If you are a fan of the legend of the Four Horsemen, you know him. The one and only James J. Dillon has graced us with his presence tonight. Thank you so much for coming on such short notice. You have no idea how much this means to us.
Well, we all got lucky. I appreciate the kind words, and Sean Oliver and I go back several years, and I've got a great relationship with Kayfabe Commentaries, and as you mentioned, I'm going to be appearing at their booth on Saturday at the Legend. I think I may be wrong, but I think this is Legend of the Ring 11, and they've already announced a date for 12 later in the year, and I was there earlier for one of the, I think it was Legends 3. So it's been a great series, and as you mentioned, some great names are going to be there. I'm looking forward to talk about the Horseman era. One familiar face across the ring during that period of time was American Dream Dusty Rhodes, and I know Dusty's there on Saturday. Jim Ross, a lot of great names. It'd be great to be there and see some old friends.
Now, for fans that aren't aware of it, and I only am because of my history with the business and living here in the Florida area, you started your career in a time where it was, you said it, I think on a DVD that you did, one of the, it may have been the Horseman DVD, that you actually had a better shot of getting into the crime syndicate than you did in professional wrestling. What led you to actually want to be a performer, and just how hard was it to get into the business in the late 60s, early 70s?
I had a few matches, and I actually had two matches that I don't even count back in 1962, but 68 started a series of matches. I think I had like 10. That's what I wanted to do, and I got a chance to be around some of the old-timers of that era, and there was a guy named the original Zebra Kid, George Bullis, who traveled all over the world, and one day he said, look, if you're serious about this, you need to go get your education first, and you need to learn the fundamentals of amateur wrestling, because if you do go forward, that's going to serve you well. And I took his advice, and I got my college education, and went out for wrestling, learned the fundamentals, and I played judo for 3 or 4 years during that period of time, so I knew how to protect myself in terms of falling, and I just wasn't going to be discouraged. I was a referee actually first for probably 6-7 years, and I at one time thought maybe that's as far as my dream would carry. Whatever assumptions I made, I made on my own from just, you know, frequently watching. And I was in college at the time, and they used to do a studio show out of Philadelphia that aired on Saturday and was taped on like a Wednesday night. And the guy that took the ring out of storage each week in a small studio in the basement of NBC in Philly, I would go and assist him, and then we'd each put a T-shirt on. He'd get the jacket in one corner, and I'd get it in the other. And there was a blizzard one night, and the commission referees didn't show up, and they had enough guys there to tape the show and looking for a referee. And as often happens in life, you know, is being the right place, the right time. And they said, "Hey, kid, can you do it?" And I said yes, and I guess did a good enough job that they wanted me back again. And as I said, that lasted 8 years. But as you pointed out, back in that era, earpieces and this kind of, the only instructions I ever remember from that first time out were, you work 3 times of the ring and, 3 corners of the ring, and kid, whatever you do, we don't want to see your ass in front of the camera. So, I knew enough to follow those instructions, and, it was obviously a different era, but, because most of the referees were commission referees, and so they got assigned, as maybe a political favor, I was the one true wrestling fan under the bunch, and so I had the honor, and actually I credit most of my knowledge of because they didn't have wrestling schools and ways to break into the business. I can't count the championship matches that I worked while Bruno Sammartino was the champion, against the likes of Killer Kowalski and Professor Tanaka and George the Animal Steel and Baron Sakluna, and to be in the ring and right on top of the action after having been a fan, and to see what goes on in the ring, and to hear the fans and to see how they respond to what goes on in the ring, that was a big part of my learning curve.
When you're in that situation with someone like that, where you've got a Sammartino or someone like that, is there a point at first where when he comes down that aisleway and you're just standing there going, oh, crap, I have to referee this match. I'm not sitting third row here at the Garden or in Pittsburgh watching this. Are you able to snap into it real quick, or is it a holy crap, that's Bruno Sammartino with the worldwide, whatever you wanted to call it back in the day, world championship?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, as I don't have specific memories, and I'm sure the first couple times I was in awe of, you know, of the atmosphere and what was about to take place. But it's like anything else. You know, you hear professional athletes talk about, whether football players or baseball players, that no matter how much of a veteran they are, it's a natural thing to get those butterflies right before you start. And I'm sure that was no different. And then, you know, the announcement's made, the bell rings, and then you know, your adrenaline is still there, but you know you have a job to do, and you don't think so much about the circumstances.
JJ, thanks again for joining us, and I must say I'm a big fan of your work as a manager of not only the Four Horsemen, but when you were managing Tully Blanchard. as you went through your career and, you know, you transitioned from wrestler to manager, and you eventually became what you have become and such a legend as a manager in the wrestling business. How hard was that transition for you to make from once being in the ring to now being outside and helping those in the ring with telling the story?
For me, it wasn't really that big a transition. Again, I was chasing my dream, and I feel that when I started to wrestle, I was actually a better wrestler because of the experience that I'd had in the ring as a referee. And a lot of people, of course, I'm best remembered as the leader of the Four Horsemen, but unless somebody has read my autobiography or is really into the history of wrestling, they might not know that I had over 3,300 professional matches in my career. So I traveled all over the United States, held titles, traveled all over the world. I spent a year in Australia in 1979, I think it was, one of my favorite spots in the world. And that experience then served me well when it came time to manage, which was never really, you know, my plan. It was, again, a situation being the right place at the right time and being presented with an opportunity. And it was like, sure, let's go for it. And the other side of it is I was never blessed with a great physique. I wasn't a Hulk Hogan, certainly, or an Ultimate Warrior or a Lex Luger. I was tall and lean and probably looked bigger than what I was. And my strongest attribute, I thought, were my interviews, because I worked very, very hard on my interviews, even as a wrestler. So as a manager, it was a natural transition, because now I was focused mainly on doing what I thought I did best.
Which leads to a chat room question that one of our listeners wanted to know. What did you believe and still believe to be a key to being a successful manager in your day and as today? Because unfortunately, there aren't as many managers as prevalent in the 1980s, where, I mean, if you went to WWE, you threw a dart, you hit a manager at one point.
Yeah, it was a different era, and the businesses changed dramatically. You had a much more diversity in characters, and, you know, there were the Mongolian Stomper that was the first guy I managed, the Abdullah the Butchers, that actually, you know, to be at their best needed a manager. They never spoke, and the manager was the one to further the story. But for me, and there have been a lot of successful managers that had different styles. I always say that the guy that set the standard was Bobby the Brain Heenan, who to me is the greatest manager of all time, that could do it all, and was really a great wrestler in his own right too. But you look at the Mouth South Jimmy Hart, or Sir Oliver Humperdinck, who we sadly recently lost, and Playboy Gary Hart, and the list goes on and on and on. But for me personally, my philosophy was always less is more. I didn't do a whole lot. My whole focus was to be into the match, because if somebody sitting there bought a ticket and I, you know, want them to be into the match, if I'm not into the match, how can I expect them to be? So the things that I did at a crucial point. And again, you know, my philosophy was always, I'm not there to be the center of attention. And for me, less is more.
As you mentioned, before you became a manager, you worked several territories. You worked here in Florida for the Grahams. You worked in Amarillo. You worked the Central States area. You had worked out Western states. Was there a particular territory in the U.S. that you at one point learned the most in, and which was the worst territory in your mind, money-wise and booker promoter-wise?
Well, I can't say there was ever one that you would say is the worst territory, because I was just thrilled from day one to be in the business. I broke in the Carolinas with Jim Crockett Sr., and so obviously the money that I made in the early 70s wasn't great, but it was a chance to break into the business that I wanted so much since I was a kid. And so it wasn't about the money at that point. It was about having the opportunity, and and being able to learn. I guess two of my favorite places were certainly Florida and Amarillo. Florida because Eddie Graham and Dr. Jerry Graham were two of the big stars that I, as a kid, that I saw in Madison Square Garden. And then once Eddie Graham settled in Florida and built such a great promotion there, for me then to go to Florida to be around Eddie Graham, I learned so much from him. I regard him as really my mentor. I think he had like a seventh grade education, but he was a genius in terms of understanding the psychology of our business, and I really love that. And then, you know, working in Amarillo with two legends, two former world champions, Dory Funk and Junior and Terry Funk. Again, it's a smaller territory, you know, a lot of miles, but the talent that they always had there, and I think the Funks had a lot to do with drawing talent into it. Plus, they had a working relationship with All Japan Wrestling at the time and Giant Baba. So guys that worked Amarillo kind of had their names near the top of the list for opportunities to go to Japan, which was another one of my goals. So they would have to be the two places that I enjoyed the most. But again, I spent a year in Australia with two side trips to New Zealand, and I have fond memories of that as well.
Now, everybody asks about the Horsemen, and it's such a big part of your career. But I would like to ask, you had mentioned that Dusty Rhodes is going to be at this festival coming up on Saturday, Legends of the Ring 12. And you had so many feuds with Dusty Rhodes and then the Road Warriors as manager of the Horsemen. What was it like to work at that time period in the 80s and the high point of wrestling, essentially? You're traveling across the globe and such a hectic pace. And you're working night in, night out with guys like Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors and the Garvins. And as you guys get to the venue and they say, you guys are working Dusty tonight, you know, is it one of those automatic, we can make this happen, no problem? Or was there some thought processes put behind it every night? Or did you guys, once you guys got out there, the magic just happened?
Yeah, I mean, Dusty is one of the great, great success stories of our business. I mean, I first met Dusty when I broke into the business back in, I think, 68, 69. I worked in some tag matches on TV with, they were called the Texas Outlaws at the time, but it was Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch, both of whom then went their separate ways after that at some point, and both had very, very successful careers. Dusty was unique in that he was the right place at the right time when Playboy Gary Hart had Pak Song Nam and Gary Hart's Army in Florida, and it was a natural thing, you know, with the great mind of Eddie Graham there for the American Dream to be created. He was the guy that picked up the banner for the working man, the plumber's son. And he was such a success story, and he had such a gift for rap, and could talk and just, you know, in the ring could make it happen. And a lot of times he's not given enough credit for being a good athlete, because Dusty was a good, he played baseball, played football. He was a good athlete. And he also, was one of the few success stories that had, you know, good success in a territory like Florida, and also when he traveled to the Northeast and went to Madison Square Garden, he was a huge star there too. So at the time, the depth of talent in the 80s, 86, 87, 88, when the Horsemen had that phenomenal run, Dusty was the catalyst on the other side. And as you mentioned, it was the Road Warriors. It was Magnum TA that can't be forgotten, that had a tragic accident that shortened his career. The Koloffs, Nikita Koloff was big during that time. the Garvins, and then there was a lot of guys, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, in those war game matches. There was a lot of guys involved, but the depth of talent was really, really great, and Dusty was the one common denominator. Jimmy Valiant, the names just, you know, keep flowing forward, but Dusty was always the one that, kind of was the guy that headed the banner.
I fortunately had the day off today, so I perused for like the 8 millionth time Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen, which is available through WWE.com. And speaking of Dusty, you and Arn and Tully eloquently talk about one of the more shocking incidents of the 80s, where you guys hired a camera crew to follow Dusty to the Crockett's office and attacked him and blacked out the thing. How do you think, let me ask this in two parts. One, how much was that your creative thing? Was that Dusty's? And do you think something like that could play in today's modern wrestling?
Well, certainly it was ahead of its time at that point. And as I remember back, a guy named Wayne Daniel, who was a great television producer and cameraman, it was a one-camera shoot that was then edited together. And what I'm most proud of is a couple things. Number one, when the thing played, it was established right from the very beginning. You know, the camera's sitting in the back seat, and it was like, hey, we're paying you big money to do this, so no matter what happens, you know, you may not like what you see, but you keep that camera rolling and capture what happens, because that's what you're being paid for. And that explained why this was being shot. And then the next phase of it is when it went to air, you had David Crockett and Tony Schiavone that had this terrible sour look on their faces, like they were almost apologizing for having to even air this thing. And then once again, if it was that distasteful, you know, then why were they going to show it? And of course, you know, we came on very confident and somewhat arrogant and said, well, look, the reason that you're showing it is because we bought the time so that we know that the people are going to see it. That explains why it's being shown. And we were a bunch of bullies. And as I said, Dusty Rhodes was the key figure on the other side of the ring. And our logic was, well, you know, let's set an example and show all these other guys that have looked up to Dusty and been there and been a part of the scene. If they do this to Dusty, what are they going to do to me? And it was an intimidation factor. And we got more mileage out of that one video. And there were people who were calling up and saying that the criminal charges should be filed against us for what we had done. It just was. And it was a thing that it wasn't like there was a script. I mean, we just ran with it. And again, that says volumes about the depth of the talent at that time. I mean, even the Horsemen coming together, it wasn't a planned thing. I mean, Ric Flair was the world heavyweight champion. Tully Blanchard, I think, was the national champion at the time. Ole and Arn were the world tag team champions. And we were doing programming on TBS every week. And you know, we would plug, you know, the upcoming venues for that next week to try and help those towns. And, you know, it was a two hour thing every Saturday. And I think at one point, whether we had time to spare, and it's like, well, hey, you guys got all the belts, you know, just everybody go out there as a group. And I actually only managed, Tully at that time. And Arn was the one that when the mic came to him said, hey, you people at home, take a good look at your screen, because never have so few wreaked so much havoc on everybody else. You'd have to go back in history to the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And he put up four fingers. And it was just a passing comment. And the next time any of us went out there, even though it was largely kids in that studio audience, people started yelling, Horsemen, Horsemen. They started yelling Horsemen in the towns, and they were putting up four fingers, because it became an interactive thing where they got involved. And it, the fans are what made it what it was, and it just grew from there.
Now, I just sort of want to move it on a little bit to probably one of my earliest memories of seeing you on television, and that being your role as the commissioner of WCW. Now, after your success of being the manager of the Four Horsemen for so long, was it a complete was it sort of like a shock or a bit of a weird transition to go into a commissioner role instead of being the manager?
Well, I would be less than honest if I didn't say that it was not the shining moment of my career. I started as a referee with Vince McMahon Sr. And at the in my mid-40s, 3,000-some matches under my belt, Tully and Arn had left the Horsemen really once they left, it was never the same after that. They went to New York to wrestle, and I get a phone call from Tully saying, geez, I don't know what's going on down there. And that's right when Turner had actually bought Crockett Promotions and renamed the company WCW. And I was concerned about, you know, some of the things that I saw about how things were going to be run. And I was told that Vince McMahon and Pat Patterson were doing all the matchmaking and booking, and they were running three tours a night and TV and four or five major pay-per-views. And so here I'm getting a phone call from the place that everybody wants to be at that point. So I ended up meeting Vince McMahon at his home, was offered a job, and with the understanding that I was walking off camera. I was no longer an on-camera personality. So I spent just over 7.5 years up there, and it was, again, another big part of my learning curve to be around Vince McMahon and to see the scope of his operation. And Vince is not always the easiest guy to work for, and after 7.5 years, I reached the point where I made a decision that I didn't want to be there any longer and moved on and had young kids and didn't have another job and ended up at WCW. So when I went there, it was with the idea of, okay, I had fond memories of Turner and that show, and I thought, this is where I'm going to end my career. And I'd never met Eric Bischoff, and so I was willing to do whatever was asked of me at that point to try and make WCW a success, which is how I ended up in the commissioner role. And it was something I could do very easily, having been a manager. But, and I'm not saying that it was my favorite thing to do, but I was just willing to do whatever I could, and it was a very disappointing way to wind down my career in total honesty.
And if I can do my best Sean Oliver impersonation, everything about the creative aspect of WWE can be found on Kayfabe Commentaries, guest booker J.J. Dillon, Writing Wrestling Television. If you don't have it, go to kayfabecommentaries.com and scoop that up. Mace, I know you had a follow-up.
Yeah, Kayfabe Commentaries. I've become good friends with Sean Oliver. They took some bold steps to try some new things with the DVD market. And as you said, guest booker and some of the other things that they've done are one of the ones I did was taking a mythical pay-per-view with certain key matches, and then how would you build up to it with a month of television leading up to it. So it was a challenge, but something that basically was drawn on all my history. And we're gonna do a little something this weekend prior to my appearance in Monroe, New Jersey. So and it has to do with kind of a week in the life of the Horsemen, and we're going to take a shot at that. And I enjoy working with Sean because he and his staff always are well prepared, have great questions, and they do a great job in editing the final product so that it's easy to watch. And I'm looking forward to it. And then while I'm there, to have the opportunity to appear at their table for the convention itself, it just makes for a great weekend for me. Doing something I enjoy doing, seeing the fans that I always enjoy the opportunity of being able to say thank you to them for supporting me and supporting wrestling all those years, and seeing a lot of guys that I hadn't seen in a while, like Dusty.
Yeah, we've had Sean on numerous times, and every time he's come on, he's been so gracious with us, so it's fun to have him on. Mace, you said you had a quick follow-up, and then I believe Spug's daughter has a question? Your daughter's not old enough to even know who Mr. Dillon is, unless she's been perusing your WCW DVDs. Go ahead and ask your question, mate.
She has.
Uh-oh.
I just wanted to mention this. Like, you might not have a very favorable memory of your time in WCW, but you, at the time, had a job that so many wrestling fans would have loved for one reason only. You got to yell at Eric Bischoff. Now,
how much of that type of... I didn't yell loud enough, and I didn't yell long enough.
And you never clocked them, like I'm sure a lot of the on-camera people wanted to do. Go ahead, ask your question, Mason. Sorry.
That's all right. He pretty much answered it. He didn't yell loud enough. He didn't do it long enough.
A few weeks ago, before WrestleMania, we did a great series of interviews with some of the stars, including we had Road Warrior Animal on, and he brought up something that was also on the Horseman DVD, which you said you get a reminder every morning of when you wake up, but were they the toughest guys that you ever saw in the modern era that the Horsemen tag team wise worked best, especially Arn and Tully? A lot of people revere them as one of the best teams of the 80s. Was that the best matchup as someone who's standing at ringside watching that you saw those guys do, or was there some other team that we may not be thinking of?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I think Tully and Arn are one of the greatest tag teams of all time. And what made them so great was that they could, on one night, be in the ring with the Rock and Roll Express, who were a very fast-paced, non-stop action, and a long match. And they could be in there with someone like the Midnight Express, that were a great team and that had classic duels with the Rock and Roll Express. And then on another night, be in there with two monsters like the Road Warriors that were, direct opposite to the Rock and Roll Express, and have great matches on any given night. But to answer your question in terms of physicality, I can't think of anybody that comes to mind that were more physical than the Road Warriors. As I said, I had 3,300 some matches in my career, and the worst injury that I suffered during that period of time was at the War Games on July 4th, I think of 1986. At the Omni in Atlanta, and the War Games was very aptly named the War Games because it was a war. And when you have 10 guys in two rings surrounded by a cage with a cage on top, and the blood was flowing, and at the end to have animals slide under you, and all of a sudden, you know, you're dazed, and you look up and you see Hawk climbing to the top rope, and I was looking to get anywhere but where I knew I was going to go, and came down almost in the top of my head and tucked my shoulder at the last minute and separated my shoulder, which took me out of action for 6 weeks. So every time I hear the music of the Road Warriors and when they made their entrance, I used to get goosebumps, but the wrong kind of goosebumps, and I have the utmost respect for them. And I mean, it wasn't that they were dangerous and hurt people with a disregard. There was always a professionalism in the business that you went out and then guys got hit as hard as you could ever expect, but not to the point that a guy couldn't get up the next day and go to work and feed his family. And the Road Warriors were about as physical as it got.
Speaking of the Road Warriors, they and Paul Ellering were inducted this past WrestleMania into the WWE Hall of Fame. Took place in Atlanta, the home of WCW for a very long while, and a big draw area for the NWA in the 70s and 80s. Does it upset you a little bit as such an influential member of the NWA and in wrestling that they have not paid proper credence to guys like Tully Blanchard and the Garvins and you for your contributions to wrestling?
Well, I kind of look at it that if it's going to happen, it will happen in time. And I have to say that for the Road Warriors and Paul Ellering to be honored, it was something that was well deserved on their part. And a lot of people don't know that there is a legitimate professional wrestling Hall of Fame and museum that's located up in Amsterdam, New York. And the last 2 years, I've been there for probably 5-6 years now on their board of directors. And the last 2 years, I was the chairman of the committee that prepared the ballot for their process, and I won't bore you with that. You can go on to jjdillon.com, and you'll see a link there to both the Cauliflower Alley Club that I'm involved with and just came back from their annual banquet, and I'm also there's also a link to Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, and they've got their induction for this year, the 10th induction, coming up in May. But in the tag team category this year, which was announced back in the end of the year, were the Road Warriors and Paul Ellering. So what's significant there is here's a great tag team that's basically being honored, and what makes it special is because the voting is basically by their peers, the people in the business that really, really have an appreciation for how great they were. So it's basically a double winner for the Road Warriors this year, that they knew ahead of time that they were being inducted into the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame Museum, which is a brick and mortar facility in upstate New York near Albany that has, I mean, if you're a wrestling fan, I always say a baseball fan has to go to Cooperstown to see the Hall of Fame, and if you're a wrestling fan, you need to go up to Amsterdam and see that facility too, with all of the memorabilia. And it's not centered around any one organization or federation. It's memorabilia from you name it. And of course, I'll get to see Animal and Paul Ellering in May when they're inducted, along with Billy Robinson and Ivan Koloff, who I followed his career back from when I was a referee. So,
do you expect to see Vince McMahon there as he's being inducted this year too?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know. I would hope that, and there was a lot of controversy because people say, well, you know, Vince is a polarizing figure that you either love him or you hate him. And there's a lot of people in the business that feel that, you know, the direction that he's taken wrestling was not to their liking. But you can't argue with success. And to the many average fans, the World Wrestling Federation or the WWE, we got to make sure we don't say wrestling. The WWE is synonymous with wrestling, and so you can't ignore their success. And for the peers in the business to say that, like him or not, a guy that deserves to be there alongside his father in the Hall of Fame is Vince McMahon, and I think it would be good for him to be there and accept his plaque and his ring in person. And whether he does or not, I don't know. If not, it'd be his loss.
If you're listening to this and, like me, you probably own a lot of the DVDs and view WWE 24/7 on demand and know in June there'll be a Best of the Nitro DVD coming out, and there's already two Ric Flair DVDs, the Ric Flair Four Horsemen DVD, on the Starrcade Best of DVD. On a lot of these DVDs, JJ, they mention Ric Flair says it, a few other, the talent says it, that if Jim Crockett had not expanded out the way he did, such as moving Starrcade 87 to Chicago, he'd still be in business today. Do you subscribe to that? Do you think the money was going that crazy in 86, 87, that it was that hot that you could have kept competing with Vince?
I think, you know, and I've had a lot of time over the years to analyze the situation. And remember, my history goes back to Jim Crockett Sr. when I broke in 1971. And the office was in a house on East Moorhead Street in Charlotte. And Jimmy Crockett and David Crockett and Jackie Crockett, who was a cameraman right to the end, and Frances, the daughter, she was involved with the baseball team that they also owned in Charlotte, the minor league team. You know, they weren't around the business at that point. So I got to see that transition over the years. And it was a family-owned business. A lot of the people during the glory years when the Horsemen had that phenomenal run and when the company did great business were a lot of the same people. And I think what happened was there was a loyalty to the people who had worked for them for a long time. And a lot of those people maybe didn't have the background or the wherewithal to deal with that level of success. And when Jimmy realized that to go to the next level, his vision was to get out of Charlotte, that they were so strongly attached to. And when Watts sold his promotion and Jimmy opened up an office in Dallas and moved to Dallas, because I know I moved there too, I think that was a point where they got spread too thin too fast, and they acquired a lot of talent that Watts had, and there was a great number of talent, the Freebirds and what have you, and some of the other people that they just they got too much of that talent at one time and weren't really set up and prepared to maximize the impact of that. And it doesn't take too much in the wrestling business to have a period where things are a little bit lean and it can overwhelm you. And that's really what happened with the Crockett family and caused a situation where Ted Turner stepped in and bought the promotion, first of all, because he had always wanted to be a quote-unquote wrestling promoter, and secondly, he wanted to protect the programming that was still very successful at that time on the Superstation.
Now, just one last thing. We do, on one of our other shows here on the network, we do what is known as the Great Debate. We take a topic such as our upcoming Great Debate, which will be Greatest Manager of All Time, and we basically create a tournament bracket with a list of candidates, and we go down till we have the best of the best. We would like to know why we should vote J.J. Dillon the best manager of all time, or if not yourself, then who and why?
Is he running for office? Wow, I didn't know that.
Wow, yeah, I've never been one to self-promote. Anybody that knows me personally knows me as someone who is... never been full of myself. I'm very humbled by the success that I've had, and I think that was part of why I got so much help from so many people over the years, and that combined with hard work and being in the right place at the right time led to my success. One of the roundtable things that we did with the WWE had to do with managers. Actually, it was the first one that I did, and one of the questions near the end was, if you had Mount Rushmore with the presidents up there, but you replaced them with wrestling managers, you know, who would they be? And of course, I disqualified myself. And to answer that question, Bobby the Brain Heenan would have to be the number one guy. Another guy that doesn't get sufficient credit would be the Playboy Gary Hart, who had a great mind for wrestling, but he never got to spend a lot of time on the big stage. And if you weren't in New York and didn't have that exposure, a lot of people never knew how really great you were. So, in terms of picking people out, I would be down the list, certainly underneath, Bobby the Brain Heenan, and just to be mentioned with Playboy Gary Hart would be an honor too.
Yeah, unfortunately, fans, if they're not of my age, didn't get to see him in his era, the world class championship wrestling with the Von Erichs. And then, unfortunately, after, I believe you had left the territory when he came in with Terry Funk and the Great Muta. Am I right? Or were you still in the office at WCW?
No, I wasn't. Well,
you're on your way out.
I've interacted with Terry Funk, the guy that I'm probably closest to after all these years, that I talked to several times a month is Terry Funk, who's a guy who I learned so much from, and always had a keen eye for the direction of the business and was always ahead of the curve. So I've worked with Terry Funk, not only Amarillo, but when they would come in and out of Florida, when I made trips to Japan, one of my favorite people in the world. And aside from being a great, great talent, he's a great human being, too.
If fans have never been to jjdillon.com, you can go there and order his book, which is called Wrestlers Are Like Seagulls, From McMahon to McMahon. It actually says this on the website, so I must read this. P.S., save the envelope, the book comes in, because J.J. Dillon sends the books out personally.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't see that very often.
No, it's actually, it started out as a thing that I was going to do the first year, and I've just chosen to continue doing it. Scott Teal did Ole Anderson's life story ahead of mine, and he's since done Ivan Koloff and the assassin Jody Hamilton and Tony Atlas, and Stan Hansen, he's a great author and a very, very respected historian. And the orders that come in, as I say, off the website, and it's also available on Amazon.com, but if you go there, it's going to cost you the same amount of money and you can't get a signed copy. So that's why I would encourage you to either go to Crowbar Press, or if you go to JJDillon.com and you click on that, it takes you to Crowbar Press. And my way of saying thank you for the people that go to the trouble to find the book and get it is that I sign copies at no additional charge. And if you want a personalized for a gift or for the holidays or for a birthday or just to have it for your own collection, Scott sends me the information if they want it done that way or if they just want it signed. And he sends me a couple cases at a time. I sign the books and address the envelopes and take it to the post office. So, you know, that's what he's referring to. And as I said, there's no extra charge for that, and it's my way of saying thank you. But for those of you that, that take the time to check it out without going into a big story about what the book is all about, I suggest you go to the review section and see the comments by those who bought the book, and there's a multitude of reasons why different people have enjoyed it for different reasons, but you'll see a common thread there of people very, very happy that they bought the book and find it very entertaining and very educational, too, as far as the history of the business and how the business is run, as well as a feel-good story about a young kid that had a dream, and then, hey, my dream came true.
If you do attend the convention this weekend, it is $10 for each item you bring, or $25 for a photo with JJ, an autograph, and a copy of the Guest Booker DVD, which is available through kayfabecommentaries.com. Once again, it is this Saturday from 9 to 3 at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Monroe, New Jersey, which is, I believe, off of exit 8A of the New Jersey Turnpike. Thank you once again so much for being part of our program. You have no idea how much this means to us.
Well, I've enjoyed it. We got lucky. I didn't have a commitment tonight, and I was happy to help out Sean with the request. And to have, I always enjoy talking wrestling. You guys had some great questions, and I hope to see a lot of the fans this weekend in Monroe, New Jersey. And for those that maybe can't get there, I will be up at the Hall of Fame like the third week of May for the annual induction, and you can catch me up there as well. And I always manage to bring some copies of my book with me.
JJ, real quick, looking on the website for the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, is the induction ceremony open to the public? Are there tickets still available, and how does one get in?
That's a good question. And if you go to the website, I think it says on there how you go about getting tickets. There is a kind of a meet and greet during the day that's very reasonably priced, where they limit the number of people and you can get an autograph from all these legends that are usually there and you know, give it their time, because all the proceeds go to the Hall of Fame. And then Saturday night, they have a wonderful dinner that every year is sold out. So at this point, I'm not sure the status of that. And it's not a big town. Hotels can be hard to find too. But if you go to the website, I'm sure there's information on there about how you can go about getting a ticket. And it would be a great, great evening. This year, I have to be honest, I'm going to be there during the day, but I'm leaving a little early. This is the first time I'm going to miss the actual formal banquet. My son is graduating from high school in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm going to catch a plane late in the afternoon and fly to Atlanta so that I could be there for that on Sunday morning.
Congratulations
to him in advance.
Yeah, actually, I have twins that both are graduating from high school, a boy and a girl. So the one is in private school and one is in public school, and I'm making three trips to Atlanta in 3 weeks in order to take all that in. But it's a very proud moment for me as a father, and I have another girl that's in 10th grade that's come along too, and I also have a daughter that I'm very proud of from my first marriage that lives not too far from me up in Pennsylvania, and very blessed to have wonderful children.
We once again are very honored to have had you here with us tonight. Coming up after the break, we will get into everything from Extreme Rules that was based here in Tampa, The Rock, not Sir Rockin, The Rock himself, Dwayne Johnson's birthday party last night, and some interesting stuff coming out of the TNA tapings in Orlando, Florida. Online World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be right back here on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Thanks, guys.
Professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene, all this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Big Vicious,
Nick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling stars today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam,
Mr. Kennedy,
Christian Cage,
Brett Berry,
Candice LeSalle,
Christy Hemme,
Jay Lethal,
yesterday,
Brett the Hitman Hart,
the Sergeant Slaughter,
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man,
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time,
Jimmy Van the Boogie Woogerman,
and tomorrow,
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Here's a quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show. So tune in. Listen. I demand it.
In case you missed it, this is what happens when WTR roasts Tim Stein.
Tim Stein is also not Jewish. It's horrible to assume the man is Jewish just because his name is Stein. You know, maybe that isn't even his real name. I mean, it's probably Goldstein or Steinberg. You don't know. He'd tell you himself if he were here tonight. And I'm told he's taking the day off for some holiday of his. I don't remember what it's called, but he pronounced it with a
Tim really does work hard at making the WTR network what it is. Seriously, I'm not joking. Somebody pay this guy. He's like 65 years old. He needs retirement. He gets retirement. We get less Tim Stein. It's win-win, gang. Come on.
Happy birthday. You suck. You suck. You suck so bad. That's not true. You don't actually suck. You more or less blow. You've got a perfect face for gay porn, or at least a perfect mouth. That's what JJ tells me.
He's also not a pervert. The last couple of years, he had a wonderful and healthy relationship. He stayed with her every night, constant, wild sex. You know, it's sad when they had to break up, because he couldn't find the puncture repair kit. Don't get me wrong, they tried to patch things up, but Tim just couldn't bear the sight of her anymore. Not with a duct tape holding her neck closed.
Tune in to all the great programming on the Wild Talk Radio Network, as you never know what will happen next.
All right, wrestling fans, this is Rick the Model Martel. Yes, of course, the one and only the model. You are listening right now to Wild Talk Radio Network. Yes, a network with some class, of course. And remember, fans, arrogance is not just a fragrance, it's a way of life.
This is Bob the Farm Mage telling you to tune in to Otaku Talk Live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. How am I doing this? Don't tell me I bent laws of space and time again.
All radio.
goddamned casting magic missile.
Thanks again to J.J. Dillon, JJDillon.com, Sean Oliver of KayfabeCommentaries.com with the epic score. Yes, I'm doing a very bad Jim Rome. Legendary. Yeah. Alan Logic, All I Will of Wrestling Radio, which, amazing. 50 episodes ago, all I did was hang up and I became a legend in my own mind. And 49 episodes ago, the two gentlemen that are with me tonight, Spug and Mace, became fixtures on this program, so thanks to them. We will be joined in a moment by our friend Scott Fishman, who contributes to the Miami Herald, as we'll get into everything from TNA Wrestling, WWE, and tying into WWE, of course, if you watched the Extreme Rules pay-per-view like we did, before I joined Omega and Mace on WrestleTalk Radio, about 10:30, you're sitting there and it's like, all right, this pay-per-view is really fun. What do you mean the President of the United States is going to speak? So we start, Mace and Omega and I start popping jokes off, going like, he's watching the pay-per-view and he wants to complain about the way the show's going, how predictable it is. And next thing you know, The Rock of all people, not Sir Rockin', the other Rock, Dwayne Johnson, tweets something about just been told, he wasn't the, Donald Rumsfeld former, chief of staff guy that leaked it, but we're sitting there watching a pay-per-view and all of a sudden if you're in the St. Pete Times forum, Spug, you got told by John Cena of all people that U.S., Navy SEAL forces got public enemy number one. And you chimed in on WrestleTalk Radio and in a PG-13 way, you are our political commentator. You're not really conspiracy brother, but, in as many seconds as you can pontificate on this historic moment. He can't. Because he too is stunned in silence as well. For me as someone, and I don't know about Scott, we'll ask him in a second, but for me, I remember, I tie a lot of stuff into sports as well, and I grew up in New York, so I unfortunately got stuck with Game 5 of the NBA Finals, where all I did was go get a soda and I come back and my game is split screen with O.J. Simpson and a Bronco, and I'm going, what the crap? When you were watching the show, Scott, were you like a lot of us social networkers going to the phone going like, what do you mean the president's going to talk? I'm watching a pay-per-view, damn it.
Yeah, I mean, actually, while I was watching the show with my friends, I live tweet with everyone because I think it's the funnest thing, even when a show is really bad. Like, if I'm watching an Impact, it's not very entertaining. And I'll tweet back and forth with people. And I just so happen to be on Twitter, and then I see the trends, and what's trending is not Barack Obama, but Osama bin Laden dead, or RIP Osama bin Laden, or something like that. And I go on, and then I click on it, thinking it's some joke, because so many celebrities, you know, have been said they died or something on Twitter, but this time I click, and I'm like, whoa, what happened here? And it was just, you know, it just so happened it was going on during the main event, which, you know, my mind was, you know, I was watching the match, but my mind was on, you know, obviously on what the news that broke and everything, so it was almost like I was almost wanting the match to end because I wanted to actually watch the news. I wanted to see everything going on. So it was a kind of a unique situation about finding out through Twitter. I mean, who would have thought 10 years ago that that's how we would get our news, through social networking and social media? So I just thought that was interesting that I found out through Twitter, of all things.
Yeah, we unfortunately, as I said, we were watching the show here, and Mace, being that he is in Australia, may not understand it as much as an American, but when you hear Osama bin Laden dead, I mean, even you, Mace, were sitting there going, they got him? Holy crap. Wait a minute. I'm still watching a pay-per-view here.
What pay-per-view? It hit 10:30. That pay-per-view didn't exist.
That's why R-Truth came out, because he was going like that. That bearded dude's taking our thing. And then, of course, during Russ Talk Radio, we had some of the greatest tweets. Is that what the technical term is, Mace? It's tweets?
Yes, tweets.
Yes. From comedian Jeff Dunham, who, if you've never seen, is a ventriloquist, who has some great parts of his act, including Ahmed the Dead Terrorist. Go to JeffDunham.com, as Peanut likes to say. In case you haven't figured it out, tonight's movie soundtrack night, so there'll be tons of movie reference name drops, sleeping, as Mason Spug and Soraka like to say. A funny note before we actually get into the pay-per-view itself and The Rock's birthday party.
F your pay-per-view.
Well, let me bring this up, because this came out of the TV tape tonight, which is so funny to think that while TNA is doing their second day of TV taping, 15 minutes up the road at the new Amway Center, Amway Arena, whatever the heck you want to call it, WWE is holding their Friday Night SmackDown taping, and one of our listeners sent a spoiler from the show that says that Sean Daivari had a dark match against Ted DiBiase Jr., which immediately brings fans back to a few years ago when Sean Daivari was affiliated with the infamous Muhammad Hassan character that just was like the mega
flag.
Well, if they had stuck with it the way that it was created instead of turning him into a terrorist...
I've said it a million times. If they had stopped with the, you know, masked, the whole terrorist thing that they did was stupid. I mean, the premise of the gimmick was fantastic. It was probably one of the greatest heel gimmicks to ever come out of Connecticut.
Quite frankly. Yeah, and obviously it's going to be possibly coming back to a TV near you. And the funny part was, on the OWW Genesis Forum, which is available through
online. Are you serious? They're going to bring that back?
Well, he apparently did a dark match with Ted DiBiase Jr., where obviously Teddy
Daivari
got
Daivari did, or?
Sean Daivari.
Okay, not Muhammad Hassan. Daivari.
No, Mark Kopengi or Collette, whatever the heck his name is way long gone from the business. I think it was Slam Wrestling Greg Oliver's outfit that just did an interview with him, which can also be found on the OWW Genesis forum. The reason I brought up the forum was a few weeks ago it was leaked that Daivari had actually re-signed with TNA Wrestling. And it's kind of funny that he's up the road a few moments there at the brand spanking new Amway Center Arena, whatever the heck you want to call it. Just to run the pay-per-view real fast, I had fun watching this show being a former employee of the St. Pete Times Forum, especially during the Falls Count Anywhere match, where I became a tour guide for Mace, Sorokin, and Omega, going, hey, they're going up section 130, 101. Now they're coming down 120, 130, 129. That's pretty cool. As Omega had said, and I'm sure Mace and Spug and Scott will agree in a moment here, this was the easiest pay-per-view to predict in recent memory. Randy Orton defeated CM Punk in a last man standing match thanks to a super RKO, in a match made up on the spot by SmackDown general manager Theodore R. Wong. Kofi Kingston is your new U.S. heavyweight champion, defeating Sheamus. Broken hand and all, Jim Ross braved the match with Jerry the King Lawler, unfortunately losing to Jack Swagger and Michael Cole. Roll my eyes and make cornet faces, Mace likes to say, in the Country Whipping match. Rey Mysterio had moved to SmackDown, great way to end the feud, have Ray Ray win over Cody Rhodes in the Falls Count Anywhere bout. The shock of shocks, Michelle McCool McTaker lost to Layla. However, we had the debut of our favorite WWE diva, and that would be Karma, who hit Michelle McCool with the implant buster, and then, of course, got
come kill the bitch.
Yes,
I saw her last night, because I didn't get to see the pay-per-view. I didn't watch pay-per-view. And I watched a little bit of Raw last night, and I got to see her come out in the Kelly Maurice match, and I was kind of wondering why she left Kelly alone, and two, when she hit that on Maurice, I was like, oh my god, she killed her.
Good timing on that scream there.
Oh yeah, oh. That was really good. Michelle McCool had the same thing. I know you and Omega said it on Sunday. It's like, see those lumps in her throat? What are those?
it's for her to come out sort of as the anti-diva. I mean, and quite frankly, in the mold of what WWE has done over the past few years, you know, with you've got all your blonde bimbos and your breast implants and stuff. When you bring somebody like Kong in, who, one, is of African-American descent and not a white girl, but while the majority of the divas are white, there have been a few ethnic, we had Latinas and black girls and whatnot. But the other thing is she's not a supermodel, you know? She's not going to grace the cover of Playboy or a lingerie magazine.
You never know. There's some people that may like that.
Yes, but you get my point. You get my point.
Oh, absolutely.
However, can we say this about Kong? She has slimmed down.
Oh, yes.
That much is obvious, but she's still got that ass.
She does have that ass. But the way she just, that methodical march down to the ring, and I hate her entrance music.
Oh, her cackling.
Well, no, I love the cackling. But have any of you listened to the Korn album? I believe it was Follow the Leader.
I'll vote no.
All right.
I have.
All right. There's a song on there. It's called Dead Bodies. And the beginning of this song is this just really creepy, mono-noted music box. Just, you know, like someone twisted music box, you just hear the ding, ding. It's really creepy. If they would have her cackling over this, like, creepy music box and that slow march down to the ring, the psychological impact of that entrance would be phenomenal.
It could work. We had three championship matches in a row to end this pay-per-view. And two of the three, you got new champions, both world titles. Oh, sorry, one world title, one WWE title. Changed hands. Your WWE tag team champions are still Big Show and Kane, defeating Ezekiel Jackson and Intercontinental Champion Wade Barrett in an impromptu lumberjack match. Christian, Captain Charisma, is one of those folks now that gets to walk around and go, I won the NWA world title and the world title of WWE because he defeated Alberto Del Rio, however you want to say his last name.
Alberto Del Rio!
Yes, I would love to get Ricardo Rodriguez as a guest just so he could do that on the air for us. That would be awesome. Your steel cage match was a triple threat match, which at one point turned into almost to a fatal four-way with R-Truth coming in and destroying John Morrison. And shock of shocks, Marky Mark is now in double digits as 10-time WWE champion. I know Mace had something he wanted to talk about with the Christian Del Rio match, but I want to go to Scott first. Favorite match of the night and match you could have done without completely.
Well, I think the match you've done without completely is obviously the Michael Cole and Jack Swagger defeating Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler country whooping match. Kind of reminded me of, I was expecting the Godwins to come out at some point. I don't know about you guys, but, or maybe an Oklahoma run in or something like that. But I can't believe that Michael Cole and Jack Swagger won, which means this whole thing with Michael Cole and Jim Ross or Jerry Lawler is going to continue, which I don't understand why and insist on putting these announcers in a match. I mean, I don't know how many people want to see them in the ring for so many times. But I think the opening match was probably my favorite, actually. The Randy Orton CM Punk match is just the way they told the story, the way they built it, all the way to the end. I thought both men did a great job telling that story, and great. There's some great psychology, in spite of all, when you go down the card, there's so many big spots. There's a big spot fest with weapons and different things like that. And yeah, there was a stipulated matchup to kick the show off, but I don't know, it just felt it was a good one-on-one matchup between those guys, who also had a good match at WrestleMania as well. But for you guys, I don't know how it translated on TV. For me, I don't know. It seemed like the fans weren't into a lot of the show. How did you guys take it when you were in there?
Well, unfortunately, none of us were at the same times for them.
But
I had friends. My friends Jason and Catherine were at the event and were. Tweeting, I guess is the proper word. We're tweeting me going, oh, crowd awake, crowd not awake, crowd very awake. And that, they said the crowd was very awake during Rey Mysterio, Cody Rhodes, cause, Mesa joked around in WWE PG era, Falls Count Anywhere translates to, go ahead, Mace, give it to him, cause I can't remember the exact one she said. I know there were three.
What was it? Ringside rampant stage.
Yeah, and instead, next thing you know, you're up on the 100 level of the St. Pete Times Forum with very nicely blocked off area. Yeah. I know for go ahead.
I was expecting for that match, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but with a Fall Count Anywhere match, I'm expecting them to go into the bathroom. I didn't see any bathroom spot or anything like that.
The bathrooms in the forum aren't that huge in certain areas on that level, so I don't think they would want to go into some of them.
Okay.
Yeah, Mace, I know you had issue with Omega during our private chat. We were watching the show legally. Thank you very much. Because as Dave Lagana said, if we don't watch it legally, we have no way to talk. You had issue with the way the World Championship ladder match ended with Christian and Alberto Del Rio. Explain to the listeners what your main issue was with this match.
Okay, give me a second. Okay, Omega's not here.
Alright. No, he's not. I don't see him. So feel free to stomp fanboys.
The issue I have with Christian's win is the fact that after fighting off not only Alberto Del Rio, Ricardo Rodriguez, and, well, with the help of a ladder, what's his face, Brodus Clay.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets to the moment where Christian is climbing up the ladder, everybody else is on the outside of the ring, he's climbing the ladder, getting ready for it. What happens? We have Edge come out. And basically, to me, that translates into, we still have to make this about Edge. All they need to do was keep Edge out of it, have Christian grab the belt on his own, without the whole distraction thing, and it would have made Christian look a lot stronger, in my opinion. Because the way I would have booked it would have had Christian taking the belt, then dedicating the win to Edge, and they then bring Edge out and they have their little hug moment and everything, so you still get that. But they really need to get Christian out from behind Edge's shadow. And we're getting that coming up, but, I would have done it at the pay-per-view.
I wouldn't have had...
I know you can argue with me about it, aren't you?
I wouldn't have had Christian and Alberto Del Rio in the title picture at all. Anyway, that would have been mine. Because quite frankly, it stopped being about Edge a month ago. And so, there was no title change at WrestleMania, so that you couldn't have a rematch clause. So I think at that point, when Edge retires, you have some sort of tournament or something leading up to Extreme Rules, and then you go from there.
Actually, I think there was a kind of a backstory. I mean, you had Christian, who beat Alberto Del Rio leading up to WrestleMania all those times, so that sets him up to being one of the contenders, but he did win that battle royal also. And then for Edge, the story is that he got injured in that match at WrestleMania, and Alberto Del Rio took out Edge, causing him to retire, is what they're building it up as. And so Christian's fighting for Edge. He's fighting, you know, to become the world heavyweight champion, I think.
Yeah, you'll give us a second where we were handed what? Okay.
Can we do this, Ellen, please?
Oh, why please? Not? Oh, why
Pretty
not?
Please?
I can get away with this one.
I'll do it. So you,
yeah, this
plug
is,
your ears.
If you do not want to know what will be on Friday Night SmackDown right now, cover your ears. We'll give you 20 seconds. And at that point, I'll say you are listening to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. And each of our shows from episode 1 to now is available through the iTunes Store and through Click Wrestle On Demand, which is the official on-demand site. You have now been warned. Mace will give you the holy crap moment that none of us want to see.
And I do apologize in advance for spoiling SmackDown, but seriously, this is something that not even Cornette Face can describe.
Oh, you ain't kidding.
Coming from the SmackDown tapings, and I quote... Fuck, why did I just sound like Michael Cole then?
I don't have the iPhone. I don't have that app, so I can't do it.
Don't you boot me. I'm a broadcast journalist, damn it.
Yeah, you covered a war. We're happy for you. They showed that the Croatians and the Yugoslavians and the Bosnians had bad aim. Thank you, sir. That was epic.
Here we go.
Spoil it, please.
Coming from the SmackDown results, Randy Orton pins Christian to win the World Heavyweight Championship.
Wow.
Not even a week.
Why? 48 hours. There's so much love. There's so much support pouring in when Christian won the title. I don't know why they can't just go with it. I don't know why the office or somebody has it out for Christian ever since, you know, his first run with the company. I don't get it.
Because they don't think that he is heavyweight championship material. And like I said, if you have that thought process, then why even make that match to begin with at Extreme Rules? Randy Orton... Who was not in the match, but was already a member of SmackDown at that point. They could have legitimately switched the card around. That's why it says card subject to change. They could have put the title on Randy Orton at Extreme Rules. There was no reason to do that to Christian. None whatsoever.
That's some crazy stuff. That
this leads me to believe that the whole title, you know, was a favor to Christian. I mean, it was a favor to Edge. You know, maybe Edge got on the office and said, "Hey, why don't we give him the opportunity to have the title?" And they're like, "Okay, Edge, we'll give Christian the title. Just kidding, and then we'll have him lose it." You know,
it almost harps back for TNA wrestling fans that the night that Rhino won the championship at Bound for Glory after Jeff Jarrett was supposed to wrestle Kevin Nash, and 48 hours later at the TV taping, he dropped the belt right back to Jeff. I was like, scratch head for a moment here. Explain this one to me.
How about more along the lines of Raven winning the world championship at Bound for Glory in the King of the Mountain match and then losing it to Jarrett in a Canadian fucking house show?
Well, that was Scott D'Amore and a great way to set up that little faction they have with Wildcat Chris Harris and James Storm, and we'll talk about those gentlemen in a few moments here. So,
can we sort of try and work out the balance here? Which has the worst possible thing, Orton winning the title on SmackDown, or the person that is Kurt Angle's mistress?
We'll address
what
that
is
later
worse?
On. We'll address that in the 11 o'clock hour because. That also is going to shock the pants off of a lot of our listeners. So
is Jamal calling in tonight, by the way?
I'm not 100% sure. I gave him an email just like I did to – I gave Scott one and Graham Cawthon. Serenari Daigan wanted to congratulate us on episode 100, but Ari is starting a new job tomorrow, so he was unable to be here, and she had the responsibility of the children. So final score, children won, our show nothing, but they'll be here in a few weeks' time. As mentioned, this was the last appearance of WWE diva Michelle McCool Calloway. And this came from several sources, Wrestling Observer, some fans on Online World of Wrestling website, that, for fans that aren't aware of it, and this surprised me, that Michelle McCool has been a part of WWE going back to November of 2004. This came from numerous sources, so bear with me. Our sources confirmed that based on conversations with several WWE stars, can't call them wrestlers anymore, and a key WWE insider, this move had a lot to do with the fact that The Undertaker, Mark Calloway, is not scheduled for TV anytime soon and simply wanted his wife at home. Now, this gets more interesting, so give me a second or two. McCool's tenure on SmackDown has been somewhat controversial, as she has not appeared at house shows, only works TV tapings and pay-per-view. This preferential treatment rubbed a lot of the full-time stars the wrong way, especially since so many quote-unquote part-timers were in featured roles for WrestleMania, like Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, Trish Stratus, Vicky Guerrero, Snooki of the Jersey Shore. To make matters worse, the Cole versus Lawler match went very long at WrestleMania, taking up valuable time that others could have put to more of a spotlight on their own match. Dean Malenko was the agent producer who was the one who laid out Lawler versus Cole, and that touched off a whole locker room discussion about the part-timers who get so much airtime when the house shows are hurting and the paychecks are down because of it. So to Scott, Lay Cool was a really cool gimmick. Obviously, it was WWE's answer to the Beautiful People, but as we saw, the Beautiful People in TNA don't exist, so is there going to be a crater where the Lay Cool gimmick was, or does karma coming in just get out the big eraser and we don't even mention them anymore?
Yeah, I guess it's symbolic that karma comes in, and, you know, when this whole Lay Cool thing between the two has exploded, you know, came to a conclusion between Layla and Michelle McCool. But Layla was, you know, for months has been kind of the workhorse of the group, whereas Layla, with Michelle McCool suffering from a lot of injuries over the past couple months and everything like that. She's the one that's been going overseas and everything like that. So for me, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Layla after this, because they, you know, Layla had come so far, and because she was with Michelle McCool, I mean, winning the Women's Championship and the Divas Championship and being so featured prominently on Raw and SmackDown. So for me, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what they actually do with her, with karma and everything. It seems like they're
going to
turn her face. I mean, what are they
going to
do? I don't know.
Both Spug and Mace, I'll let either one of them go with this. And Sorok, and if he wants to, can chime in, because he's been a fan of the business as well. So to Mace first, does this kind of thing bother you, especially someone as a performer? You would, you know, surrender every life savings moment you have to be where Michelle McCool is, but because you're the Undertaker's wife, you can get away with this kind of crap. If you're in the WWE locker room and you see this kind of thing going on, does this piss you off that she was getting this preferential treatment because she is Michelle McCool McCalloway?
Of course it'd piss me off. And frankly, like we all heard the original stipulation coming out of the tapings, if you read the spoilers. She was supposed to be on her way to Raw. Of course, that takes away from her husband, so what does she do? She cracks it, and they change it to, well, okay, what do you want to do? And she's like, well, I'll leave. Well, fine, there's the door, bitch. See you later.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I have absolutely no mercy for anybody who tries to manipulate stuff that way.
Yeah, and before
you do your job, that's it.
Yeah, and before I go to Spug, if you watched Friday Night SmackDown, before you watched Extreme Rules, you heard audio that was definitely doctored, because it was originally set at the taping that it was supposed to be a Loser Leaves SmackDown match, and you can clearly hear the audio edit of her saying, WWE! So same question to you, Spug, being that you are a trained performer in ring. And if you're in this locker room, whether it's Undertaker or not, no, first off, does anybody even step up to Taker? I know he's the locker room general and maybe up in the god status as your man, Chris Triple H, as being the longest tenured guys there, but your feelings on this, is this a smack to every single WWE performer that
I said it before WrestleMania. I said it before WrestleMania. Undertaker shows up for 4 or 5 TV appearances a year, maybe wrestles 2 matches, one of which you know he's going to win, and then disappears. He is no longer relevant in that company. It is getting to the status of Hogan and Nash and those in WCW and TNA. You have a crop and wealth of younger stars who can carry that company and do great things with it. And you have guys like Undertaker who, while they may not mean to do it, are holding them back and holding them down because of their status within the company.
Sounds like WCW back in the day.
That's what I'm saying. And Vince, there are only a handful of people in the back who could say something to Taker the way it needs to be said without them losing their jobs. One of them recently retired. In Edge. The other is busy raising 3 children and showing up at limited appearances in Triple H. The third retired last year in Shawn Michaels. The fourth, however, is currently holding the WWE title in John Cena. By virtue of what he's done over the past 9 years, winning the title, becoming the major draw that he is, and the workhorse for that company that he is, and the face of that company, he has earned the ability to say what he needs to say to who he needs to say it to. And I think somebody needs to. I really do. You know, I know Triple H going over on Undertaker wouldn't have been the most popular of choices or decisions at WrestleMania this year, but it's what needed to happen. Undertaker will never be forgotten in the annals of wrestling history. He is probably one of the most legendary figures in all of wrestling. His streak at WrestleMania will no doubtedly be a thing of infamy. It will never happen again. The problem, however, is that the hype surrounding him, I think, his allowed him this status that is now hurting the industry a little bit. It's hurting the individuals in the back because you've got guys who could make a bigger paycheck working a card like WrestleMania that can't because Undertaker's got to get his 5 promos and his 1 match in so he can get his paycheck for the year and go back to Houston and sit down.
Which is a shame. To move to another topic, you brought about changes in the business. This came from numerous sources as well. WWE is an international product, in case fans aren't aware of it, and it was broadcast in numerous languages around the world. And they have apparently sent out a sheet called The Language of WWE to those that announce their products. Something that English-speaking WWE announcers were not given, nor were they told of, but the words that are banned, use your Mini-Me quotes, despite the fact that they aren't used that often on TV. Obviously, the words wrestling and wrestlers were emphasized as heavy not-to-say broadcast words, in addition to the terms catch and catcher, a term that is still used in overseas terminology for wrestling. Other banned words for international broadcast, I can't believe I'm about to read some of these, include sports, athletes, sportsmen, fighters, fight, and fighting. The company also asked the show to be labeled as entertainment or action soap opera, and that talent should be referred to as superstars or divas. And I think Scott Fishman's head may have just exploded hearing something like that. Does that just make your blood boil, or are you just thinking, like, I may be welcome to the new WWE?
I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine being an announcer and having to read or just remember all that. And just, I wonder what the repercussions would be if you used any of that terminology at least one time. I mean, if you have like three strikes and then you're out, I don't know. What, do they have sensors, a sensor button? So when they say the word, I mean, I get why they want to, you know, they want to branch out WWE, but I mean, if you're going to do that, I mean, everyone's going to think you're a wrestling company, no matter if you pretend that you're not going to be a wrestling company. It's what, you have a ring, you have wrestlers, you have guys in there who are wrestling. I mean, yes, they're entertaining, but it's what it is. They're not having a debate. I mean, there's not podiums in the ring. There's not a stage. You're not watching, you know, yes, it's soap opera, but there's no stage. I mean, it's still an athletic competition. It's still a ring. I mean, it's still wrestling, and I don't get why. They can't use the word wrestling. I mean, I get why they want to branch out and do other things in entertainment. I mean, if they want to do that, they can maybe separate that by calling it something else, like have a separate company attached to WWE. But I don't understand why they want to go stray away so far from wrestling. I just don't get that.
Yeah, it's just weird to actually call it in here action soap opera. That almost sounds like broken English that you'd hear from watching Lucha Libre in Mexico. And does any of this bother you at all? Or are you just, like I said, are you, thinking?
We talked about this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, is this just to reiterate it, I mean, this is just some amazing stuff.
It's, you know what it is? It's the same thing WWE's done for years. Back in the 80s, they called it sports entertainment. I can remember watching Hogan interviews. He kept saying, I'm the greatest sports entertainer of all time.
Yeah.
You know, it's something they've done forever, and internet smarks like us make a big deal about it because, oh, they're disrespecting the business. No, they're not. Vince has made it plain from day one that he's not wrestling. What they do in the ring is wrestling, but he's made it plain from day one that they're not a wrestling company. And I'm fine with it. I've accepted it. I've moved on. I'm fine with it.
As long as they're delivering a good product, I really don't care what they're called. I mean, same thing
right.
For TNT.
Right. I'm agreeing with you. Keep talking.
Yeah, in case you're not, I didn't get the clue, Scott, and unfortunately Spug is battling, having his own steel cage match with his internal organs as we speak, so if he...
I'm winning, by the way. I'm winning this time.
All right.
I'm winning
good to know.
At the moment.
It's that damn tiger blood you imported, isn't it?
No. It's honestly, part of it was the amount of cream soda I drank on a daily basis. I would literally go through a 2 liter of A&W cream soda a day.
Wow.
And, oh yeah, I can say with authority that since last Sunday, since Easter Sunday, I have had a grand total of, in a week and a half, I might have had a liter of pop. Total.
Need to get you signed up to a sponsorship deal really fast.
I've been drinking tons of tea, water, and Gatorade. I feel a lot better having being off that much pop. To be quite honest, I feel a lot better.
Yeah,
is there
before
a program for that?
What's the? I wish I needed one, man. I needed one.
Is
Yeah, in case you, Kevin Scott, I feel bad for you, dude. Like you said, thanks again for being with us every week. He's battling his own health issue, so if Jamal doesn't make an appearance, that's why. Before we get into the fun that was The Rock's birthday on Monday Night Raw, we need to bring up the skid mark in the room. No, I'm not talking about the previous 49 shows before I became the host. I'm talking about Ryan Howe, and that would be the most recent release from WWE Tough Enough.
Finally?
Yeah, as Stone Cold said, three strikes and you're out. The funniest part is my friend Lakeisha Oliver lives in the Tennessee area. Her and her husband work in Kentucky from time to time, and they happen to know Ryan and saw him a few times, and he was being very quiet, and they're like, can you talk about it? And he's like, I can't talk about it because technically I'm still on the show right now. Well, he can probably talk right now because he just got ran out of here. To Scott, since you haven't been on with us in recent weeks when we've talked about Tough Enough, are you watching this at all, or are you, like a lot, some of the other fans, just going, I could care less about these kids until they actually get somewhere?
No, actually, I mean, I was always a huge fan of Tough Enough dating back to the MTV days, but, you know, before they went to SmackDown, it became like, you know, during commercials or, you know, they had the little segments every week when The Miz was on it. I mean, I like the aspect of it. I like the production of it. I think Austin's doing a great job. I think Bill DeMott really is the star of the show. I mean, you talk about skid marks, I think Bill DeMott had it out for him from day one, so I think he had that hurting him a lot throughout the last couple episodes. So I wasn't surprised to see him go home this week.
Oh, come on. Listen, the business would be better off today if there were more people like Bill DeMott protecting it, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
When you have idiots like that Mikel, it's Michael. Spell your name right.
Michael.
Oh yeah, yeah, I did not like him on the show. I was happy to see him go. I mean, when I saw, I actually was rooting for Ryan during that whole elimination. I was hoping. I mean, I thought Ryan was going to go home that week, but you know, that one time he stood up. So,
no, I quite honestly, the business would be better off today if there were more individuals like Bill DeMott protecting it. I have no problem with Bill DeMott doing what he did. You know, I'm glad to see Ryan go. I haven't got to see Tough Enough for the past 2 weeks, so I probably missed my episode where Booker T got in Skidmark's face.
That was last night. They were doing opening calisthenics.
And they had midget basketball.
Yes.
I missed the midget basketball. All right. So,
with Coach John Sally. It's
it airs. Dwarf basketball. Dwarf basketball. It's going to stream.
Yeah,
you don't understand my love for the little people.
Yeah, if you listen to Talker Talk Live Wednesday nights at 9, you can hear all about that. If you did not see Tough Enough last night, it now airs 8 o'clock Eastern on Mondays, and this past week episode will be on after next week's Monday Night Raw, so you can set your DVR through to that one.
Okay, so what happened? What did he do to piss Booker T off?
He rolled his eyes at Booker during, they were talking about teamwork, and it was after the midget basketball, dwarf basketball team, and he just rolled his eyes.
No, they're midgets. Let's not be politically correct about this.
Okay, fine.
I know plenty of people in the industry, they don't care what you call them as long as you're entertained by what they do.
Okay, fine. But Ryan had rolled his eyes one too many times, so Booker popped. And picked them up, ripped them, grabbed them good and solid by that shirt, and told them, don't disrespect, don't take my kindness as weakness. And I was like, whoa, I expected Bill DeMott to snap like that, Mace, but I didn't expect Booker T to snap like that.
Oh, hell no. But damn, did he do a job on that T-shirt.
Yeah, it was almost like going back to Bob Holly in seasons 2 and 3, where in season 2 where he got in Hawk's face, and in 3 where he got in Matt Capitelli's face, and that was almost as close as you can get to that situation.
The thing with it is like, all right, you go back to the older Tough Enoughs. I remember the one with the $1 million Tough Enough challenge, right? The one that Pewter won.
Oh yeah.
Pewter got into the Rumble, and the first two people he met were Holly and Benoit. and they crowbarred that kid in the corner until he had lacerations and blisters all over his chest and back. It was almost a welcome to the business. And you never saw anything of him after that, did you?
He shows up, he was in Ring of Honor for like a cup of coffee. I mean.
Well, but no, he didn't do anything. That's what I'm saying. That with Bill DeMott and Booker T and Austin and these guys doing what they're doing and getting in these kids' faces and saying, this is what it's like, and protecting the business that they worked so hard in and so hard for is a very refreshing thing.
Yeah, and we talked about it on here before with these guys, Scott, that we've said that this edition of Tough Enough is way different seemingly than the previous three where they were on MTV. Are you fine with this aspect where they're not really showing the way Al Snow and the group did, where they're showing them today, you're going to take a suplex. This is how you take a suplex. This is how you take a body slam. This is how you feed into a body slam. Are you fine with the way that this product has been presented on USA Network?
I mean, I'm okay with. I mean, you see, it's a little bit about when they do the slams and the headlocks and the leapfrogs. But yeah, as far as the base, I'm sure they're being taught that, you know, when the cameras aren't rolling. But I can see why, you know, they want to show you a little bit of the curtain, not the entire thing. I think in this case, but I don't have a problem. I mean, I don't see that much of a difference between the two.
Yeah, for fans that watched that show and then transitioned to Monday Night Raw. It was total nonstop Dwayne Johnson night.
And when I say that,
I mean, if you think TNA back in the day was total nonstop Jarrett, this has got it beat by a long shot.
I wanted to gouge my eyes out with a rusty spoon last night, dude. I'm not even kidding.
But when your opening two matches aren't even matches, and Pitbull the rapper gets more TV time than R-Truth and John Morrison? Something's not right there, Spug.
It's not even that, dude. It's not even that. What bothers me is that you're spending so much time on a guy who could probably give a shit less. You know? Like, Dwayne Johnson doesn't care about Pitbull and the Heat girls wishing him a happy birthday. He doesn't. He doesn't care about LeBron James trying to imitate him. He could get the whole live, Dwayne Johnson's going to read your tweets. No, he's not. Dwayne Johnson's not even going to see a single happy birthday tweet one idiot from Tuscaloosa, Alabama sent to him. I'm serious. You could have done a little promo package, happy birthday, and moved on with the show. Did we really need that kind of pomp and circumstance and bullshit?
Yeah, I mean, well, like I said, Scott, this was the thing that irked me at all. Before you even got to John Cena versus The Miz, which we'll definitely address in a moment or two, you had two matches one match we knew was going to be a feeder to get Karma to the ring, but to have R-Truth and John Morrison just disintegrate like that, it almost harkened back to, and I know I'm about to use the infamous letters that I'm not supposed to use on the show, it harkened back to WCW of 1998 and forward, where you'd watch the opening hour of Nitro and you'd be sitting there going, there's wrestling on this show, right?
Well, I mean, I was there live, so I witnessed everything going on from top to bottom, but I will say, I mean, what did you guys expect? I mean, for a week, they were promoting this show as The Rock's birthday party. The Rock's birthday party, you know, they were promoting it so much, and you know how The Rock can go on and on and on. So I kind of figured it was going to be this type of show. I mean, maybe not to the extent it did, but before I talk about that, it's just interesting because the ratings came out today, and it just showed that the ratings actually decreased from that first hour to the second hour. So I guess people were, like yourselves, getting kind of tired of, you know, seeing The Rock every segment and talking about The Rock, The Rock, The Rock. You know, as much as a great entertainer he is, it was, I guess it was a little overkill. But I thought, you know, it was an entertaining opener for me. From Lillian Garcia coming out, you know, what an amazing rendition of the national anthem.
She Focus made the national anthem her bitch, by the way.
Yeah, so definitely that is true. And that was a great moment. And then, you know, The Rock coming out. That segment alone, I think, should have ended. It probably should have ended it for me, and it would have been okay. I mean, I guess you're going to talk about the ending and how they close the show, but as far as the first two matches that kick the show off, I mean, I believe, you know, the logic for the R-Truth John Morrison match, they want to set up another match for the next pay-per-view. But if there's one guy to feel bad for, I mean, I know he's getting a lot of, you know, there's a lot of bad things saying about John Morrison backstage, but, you know, from an in-ring perspective and someone that they wanted to push, but John Morrison was in the main event of Extreme Rules 2, and it's just like they totally forgot about that. So now it's R-Truth and John Morrison, so it's like R-Truth took two steps forward and then two steps back all over again. But so I see that them just said that was just a way to set up, you know, another match between the two at the next pay-per-view probably. And then, you know, the Divas are the Divas. I mean, I'm counting the days before Karma just goes through the entire Divas division and they do what they do with China and then she just starts fighting men. I see that happening in the future for some, you know, if history repeats itself.
I could totally see her taking on Mason Ryan or someone like that. That'd be awesome. Because Kong, I've met Kia numerous times, and as I've said on Rust Talk Radio, that woman will never cut a promo. She'll never cut one because she is the most soft-spoken, sweet-voiced person. And when she comes out, I told her after met her and I was like, congratulations, you just ruined every time I ever see you in TNA because I can't do it.
Yeah, it's true.
I gotta ask Mace this one, being that he is a fan of the business like Spug, and I'll ask Spug and Scott this one too. We're all aware of the phrase, the dusty finish. If you're not privy to the dusty finish, kids, we're gonna have story time with Uncle Alan. The dusty finish was created by Dusty Rhodes for the NWA days, where your heel champion would have a ref bump or some kind of thing happen. Your babyface challenger, would somehow get the pinfall, second referee slides in, boom, 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 crowd goes ape crazy nuts because the babyface won. And instead, of course, your champion, most likely Nature Boy Ric Flair, the second original ref would wake up, no, 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 Nature Boy is still the champion. So to Mace, to see this in reverse, where the Miz won the WWE Championship back, but then gets DQ'd because he was walking around with the championship belt already, despite referee Mike Chioda not seeing it, does this warrant a Cornette face out of you, or you just have already thrown your TV out the window at this point?
It's the Miami screw job, goddammit.
Yep, that's what I called it right when I saw it.
It's the Miami screw job. The Miz got robbed.
Damn right.
Where was Earl Hebner when you needed him?
Damn right.
Exactly. But I mean, even to Spug, I mean, is this just like, come on? I know you're trying to set up the moment of Alex Riley and him having to separate, but at the expense of the Miz, did you really have to do this? Because I was like a lot of people. I was going like, 24-hour title reign, thank the maker!
I would much rather see Miz with the title around his waist and have it done in a legitimate fashion than a dusty finish or other things, because quite frankly, I think he's deserved it. You know, he has done enough for that company to warrant some respect and earned the right to be champion and to continually have it questioned. I don't think it's proper. You know, we keep drawing comparisons of WCW in its final days to the WWE now, and I don't think it's going to get, you know, that bad. with WWE because I think there will be something that shocks them back to reality. Paul Levesque, I'm talking to you.
Hey, you know, he's listening for all we know. You never know who's listening these days.
You know, you need to get a hold of Vince and be like, you're ruining this. I mean, it's like when Nero played a fiddle while Rome burned. You know, it's the.
Well, let me jump to Scott real quick here. I mean, you work on and off with the Miami Herald, so you are mainstream media, and you've interviewed many stars from WWE, TNA, and whatnot. The way WWE has used Mike Mizanin, even before WrestleMania when he got the belt after the Money in the Bank thing with Randy Orton, he was one of the most media-savvy WWE superstars in recent memory. And you throw him under just so you could get the belt back on Cena? Does this just smell of politics to you? Or do you, how much longer would you have kept the belt on the Miz, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they had Cena win the title on the same night Obama, you know, I mean, Obama announced that, you know, Osama bin Laden was cut. I don't know if they're doing the whole Hulk Hogan American thing. They want to have someone like John Cena representing their company again. But I think definitely the Miz proved himself over the last couple of months. He's been all over TV. He's proven that he is, you know, as media savvy, he's been on every show you can think of. He's done commercials. He's worked that schedule. He's lived up to every obligation that it takes to be represented as the WWE champion. So he's done everything for that. I think he is, because of that, he's extended his title reign. I mean, I don't think they planned to have the Miz hold the title as long as they did. So, you know, I'm sure from my standpoint, you know, at the same time, I'm grateful as Miz, you know, being able to prove himself and be able to hold the title for as long as he did. I mean, because you have someone like Christian who doesn't have the opportunity. So I'm happy to see that. But the way it's been playing out with Cena and the Miz, you know, I'm not feeling that as far as the disqualification finish and the way they were using the Miz. So I hope that, you know, for the future, I mean, I know he can't hold the title forever, or, you know, all the time, but
he and Hulk Hogan, brother.
Cena doesn't need the title. I don't understand why they insistently continue to have him represent the championship. I understand a few times, but now they're talking about him being the champion until WrestleMania 28. He made that to The Rock on Raw on Monday. I mean, I hope that isn't the case.
To Mace, let me run the rest of the show real quick before we go to Mace. Alberto Del Rio joined the commentary group to watch Rey Mysterio and your new U.S. champion Kofi Kingston defeat Jack Swagger and Drew McIntyre, who looked like a great team. Your current WWE Tag Team Champion Kane faced Mason Ryan, and Mason Ryan did his best Dave Bautista impression, and of course we ended the show with the great videos and whatnot for Dwayne Johnson. Happy birthday to Dwayne. But to follow up on what Scott was saying there, 10-time champion here for Cena, and there's just certain people that you look at and go, he's so over, he doesn't need the belt. Is Scott right that this, you know, if all this Obama stuff and Osama bin Laden hadn't happened, this would have gone down last night? Or would you keep this belt on him? And does this bother you, this idea that Scott said that, oh my God, we may have to deal with Marky Mark as the champ till Miami next year?
Let's go bit by bit here. John Cena being over enough, he doesn't need the belt. Correct. The past 10 months have shown us anything is that the guy is still the main event, the main draw, the spotlight hog and everything else without having to have a title around his waist. Second, putting the belt on him because of the Obama stuff and all that wouldn't have mattered. If we didn't hear anything about what happened on the Sunday night, it would have been still your new champion, John Cena. That was the way they were heading no matter what they were doing. As for other, I don't even know what, like, Cena's over without the belt. He doesn't need the belt to get over and stay over. The fact that he's got it shows that maybe they just want to put it on him just to reaffirm that with people, that he can hold the belt. Mind you, I'm still sitting here going, I remember when Ric Flair's like 13, 14 through to 16 time holding heavyweight titles actually meant something. We're going to have guys that are going to surpass that, maybe even double that in their career.
Edge was almost on his way there before he retired. I mean, him and Cena flip-flopped the belt around so much a couple years ago that it was just kind of, you had to tune in to just to go, okay, who's got it now? Lita's got it? Holy crap! How'd she get it? Oh, she's holding it for Edge while he's putting his clothes back on. Yeah,
don't try to lay the jokes, Alan. That's Omega's department.
I know Omega has that copyrighted, and I just infringed.
You'll be hearing from his lawyers tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm sure Mr. Press Release himself will come after me. We want to thank Scott for joining us here tonight. MiamiHerald.com is where him and Jim Barcelone do all their great stuff. Are any interviews coming up between either you or Jim that you want to let the listeners in on?
Well, I know on the site right now, Jim posted the information, you know, the recap of what happened last night and everything, including some really memorable signs. Surprisingly, there were a lot of Vladimir Kozlov fans in the crowd, which I was surprised to see. But so yeah, you can check that out. And then also, I know you're going to post that I interviewed one of the Uzos, Jimmy Uso, who that'll be on the site as well. Who knows if they'll be with the company very much longer. I mean, with this, you know, the draft is usually historic leading up to releases. So, but they were drafted together. So we'll see how that happens. And then I should be having something with Dusty Rhodes and Sergeant Slaughter. I had a chance to interview him not too long ago, doing like a joint story with both of those guys. So you can check that out also.
Yep,
oh,
Mario.
Scott.
Oh.
Yep.
Before you go, F Miami, go Boston.
Hey, it's 2-0 right now.
So. I know.
Yeah, but before we let you go, since you were live in the crowd when Cole in his regal moment sported the Garnett jersey, how close was he to getting lynched by the American Airlines Arena crowd and maybe crowd control themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I could feel that. I mean, I heard Vicky Guerrero heat, but that was on another level. I mean, when he took that off, his shirt off and revealed that jersey, I was like, uh-oh, this isn't going to be pretty.
Oh, Miami doesn't care. Worst sports town in America.
Hey,
now. Yeah, we are a bandwagon team. Yeah, I do agree to a certain extent. That is
beautiful. All right, coming up after the break, we will talk more about episode 100, what can be seen in the future, and we'll talk TNA wrestling and other stuff here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network on Movie Soundtrack Night. What better one to take it out with than Kenny Loggins taking us to the Danger Zone?
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
You are? No, you are. It's y'all.
Say again, y'all.
You are.
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again, y'all.
For more great entertaining moments like this, please check out the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We swear we're not insane.
At least they're not.
Are you looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans? Then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forms. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official eFed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at onlineworldofwrestling.com.
There are plenty of wrestling radio shows that consider themselves to be award-winning, yet they are full of flaws. While Wrestle Talk Radio continues to bring you the best wrestling talk on the internet today, with no production flaws. Tune in Sunday nights for Wrestle Talk Radio, the best value in wrestling radio. We're just saying.
Hey, this is former WWE superstar Shawn Michaels.
Hey, I just can't stand.
And you are listening to Wild Talk Radio.
That really move I said chill.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. Try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around.
Thanks, Scott Fishman of the Miami Herald columns, for joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio, episode 100. Yawn.
God damn it. Anytime I hear that song, I want to get into a karate tournament and crane kick people in the face.
Damn right. I have friends
in training montages.
Yeah, I have friends that use that as their entrance music, and all of a sudden we start going, Cobra Kai Dojo, here they come, brothers.
Or you could be Lyoto Machida.
Exactly. We'll talk about the UFC event in a few moments here. Online World of Wrestling Radio is always brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network, who 49 episodes ago, put me in this seat to take over the show. So I thank Sorokin and Tim Stein and Spug and Mace for talking me into doing this. And who knew, 49, all these episodes later, we'd still be sitting here having this fun. So thanks to all of them for that. I also picked that song because before we get into talking about the unfortunate events that is TNA Wrestling, former WWE and TNA champion Kurt Angle is making news, and it's not for anything he's doing in the TNA ring. He recently told Pittsburgh's ABC affiliate WTAE, Channel 4 Action News, that, I can't believe I'm about to read this, so I'll go there. He is about to, I can't believe what this is. He's about to give it a shot to go to the 2012 Olympics, which I believe is in London, England, hoping to make the wrestling team and show that the world that being 40 is not old. Here's his exact quote. I feel it really good at age 42, and I might be making a statement that him being his 34-year-old nephew Mark and I are going to start training for the Olympics and go after the U.S. Open, the Olympic team trials, and then the Olympics. For fans that have been in a coma for years, Kurt is a legit former Olympic gold medalist, winning in the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta in the heavyweight class. He defeated an Iranian named Abbas Jadidi months after he legitimately fractured two vertebrae in his neck. So to either one of you gentlemen, how much drugs is Kurt really on right now?
I don't think any. I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing for him to try out for the Olympics. Not one bit. Not one bit.
But does he honestly at this age? I mean, we don't see him obviously at a TNA event, so we don't know. We're not knowing other than his legal issues, as we said he's had with Raka Khan, and I mean, didn't he tease this a few years ago, guys?
He tried a couple of years ago that he was going to. You know, all right, here's the thing. I think at his age, he wants to legitimately do something, you know, notable and monumental. And winning a gold medal winning a gold medal at his age would be that. I think, however, that he may just kind of need to step back and look at it from the sidelines.
Now, before we go to Maester Spug, I believe one of our other major contributors is joining us tonight. Would this happen to be Jim Barcelona, Miami Herald?
Yes, Alan. How are you?
We're really good. Thanks for joining us. You came at the right time. We just had Scott on, so it's like, hey, they tagged out. But did the ref see the tag? That's the great question.
That's the thing. We did the masked wrestler switch what we did. One went under the ring, the other one came out, and nobody knew.
I'm gonna say this to Barcelone too. F Miami.
Oh God.
Go Boston.
That was the most ridiculous double technical I've ever seen on Paul Pierce. I'm still trying to figure out what the hell he said, but I have no idea.
He should have. You know, they should have called a flagrant foul on James Jones, and then they didn't do that, and then, you know, he gave him the little tap of the head to the cheek, whatever, and then on the hard foul on Wade, he said something, and they shouldn't have thrown him out for that. I agree. Shouldn't have thrown him out for that, but you know what? Now that they know what's going on, don't do that again. Just don't do that again. You know, you better keep your emotions in check or these officials are going to toss it. Well, but listen, the reason why they lost that game is Kevin Garnett was nowhere in that game. Where was Kevin Garnett in game one? I mean, Rondo getting in foul trouble and all. That's the reason why Boston lost. And the Heat were killing from the outside at 3-point range and all. But
you're not
going to
hear me argue with you, Jim.
Yeah,
you're
that was
not,
why they lost game.
You're not going to hear me argue You're not going to hear me argue with you one bit. The thing that bothers me about this is that you have the Celtics, who have been to the finals two of the last 3 years, something like that, and won.
Close to it.
Yeah, right.
And won.
Yeah.
And you have this collection of free agents who duped everybody in the NBA from
Garnett and Ray Allen were not Celtics homegrown talents.
That's not what I'm saying, but the thing with Garnett is he was traded.
He wanted out of Minnesota. He didn't want to stay there, and then they
Minnesota
got Ray Allen to come in. That was a three.
Nowhere.
You know, that was a double. Listen, I'm not going to argue with you about what the Heat did, but I'm just saying, come on, what the Heat did was just a little step above what the Celtics did when they brought Garnett and Ray Allen in.
My point is, you have this collection of free agents down there in Miami who duped the NBA, and quite honestly, they are the reason that there are going to be extreme major changes made to the CBA this summer. Quite frankly,
Oh, but, I can't negotiate to have somebody come and play for my New York Knicks? Come on now.
You're
going to
get
CP3. You're going to get CP3.
Right, Chris Paul's going to be there. Then you're going to have, look, so they didn't do it at the same time, but you're going to have Stoudemire, Carmelo, and Chris Paul. That's going to be their three. So,
exactly.
I mean, but this has been, look at the Lakers. Look at the Lakers in the past and what they've been able to do.
I'm not arguing that at all. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's right one bit.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I'm not saying this right one bit. I mean, I don't like what Boston did. I don't like what Miami did because it affected my team.
Right.
You know, I think it's stupid that you have these players who were able to just kind of manipulate the system to get what they want.
Manipulate the system. I mean, that's the same thing the Yankees. I know it's a different sport, but the Yankees have done that forever. No. I don't care if you like the Yankees or not. That's not the point. What happened after that? The Red Sox start doing it. Then the Mets, by the way, the Mets did it, but guess what? The Mets did it poorly.
You can have your Phillies with their awesome rotation.
Yeah, how about the Phillies now, too?
You can have your New York Yankees, your Boston Red Sox. All I have to say, Cleveland Indians, 19-8, best record in baseball, baby. Yeah. Hey,
enjoy it while you can. Enjoy it while you can.
They're going to win the Central. They're going to win the Central.
Oh, man. 19-8, we're what? How many games is it in the Major League season? 550?
AL Central can get won by 88 games this year. 88 games will win the AL Central.
Wow.
I'm perfectly fine with that.
Now we've just switched the whole show to another.
Well, while we got Jim here, I want to bring up something we just had with the idea.
Well, I just heard you saying about Kurt Angle. I was very interested in that. How many times, and what I caught of it, I hope I'm not off track on this, how many times is an athlete that has been very good in one area and they get older and they hit that sort of the end or they've retired and come back? Even Michael Jordan came back. You know, they get that bug in their head where they're saying, you know, I could still do that. I could still try out for the Olympics. I could do that. But let me tell you something. When your head says something, your body says something else. This guy, with all the injuries he's had, especially with his neck, and please, that guy, what he did when he was younger with the neck, a broken neck, and he won a gold medal.
Yeah.
But now, you know, how could he even compete at that level? Hey, if he wants to try it, who's going to stop him? He's going to try it. But all I'm saying is when these athletes, a lot of the athletes, they get to a certain age, they don't want to let go. It's like they can never give up. I'm going to try it again. How many times the boxers, Muhammad Ali, Larry Holmes, all these boxers past their prime. George Foreman, well, you know what? It's funny. Foreman, at least, he got that one lucky punch. Well, I don't know if he was lucky, but he got that one punch on Michael Moore and won the title. That's an anomaly there. But for the most part, they all want to try to come back. It's just like, hey, guys, you know, I just hope he doesn't get hurt. That's the thing I'm worried about. I hope he seriously doesn't get hurt if he's actually serious about trying. And remember, he was always talking about MMA, and where did that go? Because he knew what was going to happen if he tried MMA. They'd destroy him.
Yeah, and Mason Omega brought this up on the post-WWE stuff for WrestleTalk Radio, and I want to bring Mason on the point again. This, and Jim just brought it up, and Spug brought it up. Even when Brock Lesnar came in to the WWE at the time, he seemed to spark something underneath Kurt to go, hey, I can still compete. Look at Brock Lesnar. And I'm going to read what you just said in our prior production chat. I mean, is this, at 42 years old, his midlife crisis to thinking, you know, lost the wife, now I got my own wife and a little baby on the way, TNA's driving me freaking nuts, making me wrestle the guy who stole my wife. Hey, I'll go back to the stuff that gave me a broken neck. Is this midlife crisis mode, Mace?
Phillies suck. Go Cleveland. Oh, wait.
Thank you for the Australian rules version of that. I mean, seriously, isn't this you follow wrestling as much as we do. This is almost like going back to Lesnar leaving to go try out for the Minnesota Vikings.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Craziest thing you could ever think of for Kurt Angle to do?
Well, it's like I said in the production chat. When most men hit their midlife crisis, they get a flashing new car and a hot piece of ass. Kurt wants a new broken freaking neck. You know, the dude's stupid for wanting to go back to it.
Yeah,
he's got a good thing going in TNA. He's making money. Why does he want to risk losing that to go do the Olympic thing again? And I can tell you now, he won't get anywhere near the medals. He is too old. His body is too broken down.
I mean, I wish him the best of luck if he tries to do it, but...
Your mind and your spirit is one thing, but your body... Look what happens even in when Undertaker has these tremendous matches at WrestleMania. You don't see the guy for a while. Why don't you see the guy for a while? Now, if it was 20 years ago, probably he'd be back a week, maybe, if that, 2 weeks. But you can't... You just, when your body, you cannot stop the aging process. I don't care who you cannot stop. You could do things to try to make it better for yourself as you get older, but still you're getting older. And with all Kurt Angle's past, good and bad, the guy has always needed a little bit of help from a mental standpoint, just because of all the different things he's gone through with his life and all. And this is a lot of times too, you know what happens, and this happens all the time, especially with this evolution of the internet. Somebody will say something, one thing, and it may not be that he actually said it. Maybe he did, but I'm just trying to make a point. Maybe he didn't actually say it, but someone said, hey, did you ever think about trying the Olympics? You know what? Yeah, I thought about that. And then someone writes something. Maybe someone overheard him saying that. Hey, Kurt Angle wants to go back and try the Olympics. He's going to want to try to win the medal again. And then someone else sees that. Hey, Kurt Angle says, I'm 100%, I'm ready to go for this. Hey, Kurt Angle's brother is going to be involved, and he's going too. And then it's just the story grows and grows. It's like when you pass it down. I'm going to tell you a secret, Alan. You pass it down. You tell it to the next person. It comes all the way around the loop, and all of a sudden it went from Kurt Angle going to the Olympics that Kurt Angle is going to manage the Boston Red Sox. I mean, it's just like, it's sometimes
purple
things
monkey
like that
dishwasher. You always gotta put that on the end of it. Purple monkey dishwasher. But to be honest, like not to cut you off, Jim, but if Angle was to do like his return to the Olympics, he should have done it when he left the WWE.
Yeah,
that's
right.
When he should have done it. Not now, many years later, after he's been in TNA.
And
but enough about that car wreck. Let's switch to another one. I want to switch to another one because I want to hear Jim's opinion on this one.
Sure.
Have you've read the spoilers for this week's SmackDown, have you, Jim?
I have not. Go ahead, though. Go ahead.
Spoil it for me, please. We've already done it for our listeners. So, listeners, once again, if you don't want to know what's going to be on Friday Night SmackDown, earmuffs.
Plug your ears and go la, la, la.
5, 4, 3, 2. Okay, you had your chance to cover them up. Mace will spoil the SmackDown taping out of Orlando, Florida.
Yes, this week on SmackDown, we had Randy Orton versus Christian for the World Heavyweight title. Randy Orton has walked out with the belt.
There you go. How about that? How about that? I mean, it's just, this was the transition. Edge is leaving. Let my best buddy win the title. He could always say he was a champion for what? Technically, I guess it would be Friday, but technically he was champion for, what, 2 days, a day and a half? He still beats Kane's record, right? He got the belt for Sunday to Tuesday instead of Sunday to Monday. But, I mean, I remember when Christian went to TNA.
Oh, yeah.
He left on good terms with WWE, but they told him, it wasn't a secret. They said, we just don't have anything, you're going to be upper mid-card, mid-card to upper mid-card, and we don't ever see you as a champion, the main champion, the guy. And he was like, you know, I think I can do that. And he ends up, he worked an extra day. They said, hey, we need you to work the next day. He wasn't contracted to work the next day. He said, yeah, I'll do that. Left on very good terms, signs with TNA, becomes their champion. I thought he did a decent job, really good job. Comes back to WWE. And just because he was TNA champion, they weren't going to say, oh, look, he was TNA champion. You know, he can handle it. No, they had him in some big spots here and there, but still upper mid-card, because they don't want to be wrong So then this happens to Edge, and he's like, hey, come on. See, my friend Christian, he's worked hard. He's been a good company guy for you guys. Look what he did when he was leaving. He stayed the extra time. He's never been a problem and everything like that. Come on, give him the – that's how I look at it now. Just give him the belt. You know, hey, if he only has it for a day or two, whatever. Hey, Christian, you could always say you were a champion. There you go. And that's not fair. I mean, that's not fair. I mean, business is business. I always go with that side of it. But come on, give the guy a chance before you start doing all that. I don't know. I mean, hey, what does that say, too, about they put Randy Orton on SmackDown? Basically, that's also telling you, hey, Randy Orton, we're moving you to SmackDown. What? Why am I going to SmackDown? Raw's the big show. Raw's where the bigger money can be made here. It's bigger exposure and all. You're going to be our champion on SmackDown. Okay, whatever, fine. I'll do that. So now you're the face of SmackDown.
Is that a demotion? Do you think that's a demotion?
Which one? Going from Raw to SmackDown?
Yeah.
I think it is. Oh, definitely. Definitely. You're the bigger USA Network. Is, even though I understand, same company, NBC Universal, more revenue dollars are going into USA Network and Sci-Fi. Raw's bigger show than SmackDown. On the road, anytime, wherever they're going, it's Raw's the bigger brand. The champion's bigger on that show. You see, if you're the champion on SmackDown, you're not as big. I mean, Edge has been there, and Edge is a great talent, but you're going to make more money on Raw than you are on SmackDown just because of the landscape of the whole business structure that they have in place. That's my thing is Randy Orton goes over there, and now they're giving him the belt. It's like, okay, we want you to carry the ball and build up SmackDown. But I don't think SmackDown is ever going to overtake Raw as being the top brand. Where did Rock go when he came back? Basically, he's been on Raw. So it's changed a lot. It's changed a lot, but I think that's bad for Chris. Christian's going to make the same amount of money he's going to make, maybe minus a few dollars because the champion's going to make more just because of incentives and things like that and all the pay-per-views and merchandising as the champion and all. But, I don't think it's, it doesn't shock me. How about that? It doesn't shock me that they did something like that. I would have. Oh, why couldn't they give him a little more time, though?
They didn't even get to switch the nameplate off.
I know. Come on. What are you saying? What are you saying to Christian? I mean, it's like, hey, buddy, thanks. Here you go. You got the belt. Oh, by the way, you're dropping it on Tuesday night.
enjoy the drive from Miami to Orlando with the belt.
Right.
Take your pictures now. Those promo pictures, they can wait. We're going to transition to TNA wrestling as much as Spug hates it because I have to do it legally. As mentioned, your Sacrifice pay-per-view is the Sunday after Mother's Day as opposed to 1 year where it was Mother's Day and I still haven't lived that one down in my house. You have Sting versus Rob Van Dam for your world championship. I'm sure that'll change. Most likely it looks like we're going to get Matt Morgan versus Scott Steiner. Yay! So want to see that. And apparently Bully Ray versus AJ Styles if you read the tea leaves right now. Before we spoil another Impact with some holy crap stuff that came out of Orlando tonight, it seems to be the hotbed of wrestling at the moment. Last week's Impact saw Angelina Love in her drug-induced stupor that I think some of the viewers have been drinking, defeating Velvet Sky, Anarchia defeat Chris Sabin, and we had a mini Motor City Machine Guns reunion. We had Sting versus Mr. Anderson's truck, and then Sting won by a pinfall or submission, I guess, since the windows tapped out. I don't understand it, but we're going to go with it moment anyway. Your TNA television champion, Gunner, also known as Phil Shatter, the former national champion, who dropped his belt to Jersey Girl's favorite guy, Chance Prophet, defeats the fallen angel, Christopher Daniels, on TV. Hulk Hogan set later on in the evening, Sting versus Bully Ray versus Mr. Anderson. Crimson and Samoa Joe ends up in a no contest thanks to Abyss. We had to sit through a Mickey James promo. We had to see Sting defeat Bully Ray and Mr. Anderson with help from AJ Styles. But we unfortunately got stuck with, and I timed it, because I know Vince Russo says, there's people that actually time out the fake wrestling on a fake wrestling show. Yeah, Vinny Roo, I timed out that you wasted 17 minutes of my life with Karen and Jeff interrogating the TNA Knockouts, the seamstress, someone who works in catering, all to find out who Kurt's mistress is. I'm going to spoil it. I don't care. I'm going to spoil it. If you were in attendance in Orlando tonight, there were rumors going around that the former Isis, the Amazon, or Aloysius, Aloisa, whatever she was for the 30 seconds she was in WWE, was going to be Kurt Angle's mistress. There are reports going around that it was going to be Serena Deeb. There are reports going around that it may even be Kurt's former real-life mistress, Rocker Khan. So if you don't want to hear who it is, you have 5 seconds from now to do your earmuffs again. Because Mace found this for us, Jim, and we both had a holy crap make Cornette face moment when it was announced that not only is Wildcat Chris Harris made his return to TNA, and I'm very happy to hear that it's a friend of Chris, but you have the TNA debut of the former China, Miss Joni Lauer, as the mistress, the Kurt Angle.
This is our music. You guys can keep talking over it.
Oh, do I really gotta talk over that crap? God!
It's our music. It was a setup. Keep going.
Okay. But apparently we're gonna get at Sacrifice a mixed tag team match of the Jarretts versus Kurt Angle and Joni Lauer. Now, we haven't seen photos of Joni Lauer. If this is the actual way she looked when she competed in the ring, as opposed to the car wreck we saw on VH1's Surreal Life. So, to our visitor from Miami, we've had head scratching moments with the Vince Russo regime, but is this like a major head scratcher to you, or does this somehow make sense?
Well, with Kurt Angle talking about trying again for Team USA, the Olympics, and different issues he had, what better person to put him with than somebody who has even bigger issues than he does away from the whole pro wrestling scene? Our fans, our TNA fans, you know, China had her run with DX, and then after that, it's just been one incident after the other. This is, I guess Vince Russo is always trying to shock, surprise, do different things, but with all the talent that's out there, you're going to try to bring her in, China in, to be his partner and go up against the, go up against the Jarretts. I don't know. It's not something that I'm that interested in seeing.
To Mace, if you, as a cafepress.com, and you can get the shirt that you guys came up with, which is sense mother bleep, can you make it? Can we start the fire sale on TNA Wrestling when you read something like this, that they're bringing in Joni Lauer? I mean, if she's clean, that's great. Good for you. I'll pat you on the back and say great. But I mean, to you, Mace, is this just like head scratch, or do you want to take Abyss's Janice and smack Russo upside the head for this one? Because I know he's listening. He always listens. So hi, Vinny Roo. Hi, JB. We love you.
Well, first of all, the t-shirt is available at cbradio.ewazone.com.
That's where it is.
Well, the many shirts that we have come up here. Currently working on a new one right now. But as for the whole inclusion of China into the storyline, well, I refer you to the t-shirt. Since mother beep, do you make it? Because this makes none. least to me anyway. I would probably go, hey, Abyss, let me borrow Janice. I'll be right back. I'm going to Vinnie Rue's office.
Yeah,
I'm
very
going
well,
to Bischoff. Then I'm going to Hogan. Then I'm going to Dixie Carter.
In that you gotta get to Mama Carter too, since she's involved here as well. You know, Mama Carter's the one that's helping with the money. So I mean, watching this show, as I said, 17 plus minutes wasted on setting this thing up. I mean, when she was in WWE, she was really good, Jim. Especially, as I said, she's Awesome Kong, and Karma's basically going to do her role right now, except maybe do it better. But she's come out and said in interviews that she's had emotional issues. If you read her ghostwritten book, it talked about being abused, and Sean Waltman eloquently talked about their relationship on his You Shoot, which is available through our friends at kayfabecommentaries.com. Get it. Please get it. It's an awesome awesome view. If she's clean, as many say, do you buy into this? Are you fine with this? Or would you have picked someone else on this roster to fill this role?
Yeah, I think it would have been better to go with someone else, just for the fact she's been away for so long, and you're bringing her. I mean, I don't know. I'll guess I'll see Thursday or whenever they're going to show this now, but to see how she looks and how she works in the ring. I mean, even back in the day, she did a good job. She worked against Jericho. She worked against some of the guys as well, and she did a really good job. But that's been a while. And I would have rather seen an Awesome Kong be the one, you know, stay with TNA and be the one that would have come out with Kurt Angle and have her fit that role and go after the Jarretts. But sometimes they bring people in and I guess they give them a chance and she's getting another chance, and for her sake, oh, you know, hopefully it'll work out and it'll go well. But you know, I'm not a big fan of the whole Angle Jarrett storyline anyway. Just haven't been really that much into it. There's put a little bit of real life into the stories sometimes, and they like to do that, and that's all good and well, but I just not into it. Just not into it. I don't know why they keep trying to throw something like that out there. It's, you know, the fans really into the whole soap opera love life of wrestling. I just don't, not a big fan of that. What's Karen Angle going to do? See, that's the other thing too, because you've got two wrestlers. You've got another one that had wrestled but hasn't wrestled in a long time, and you have someone that isn't a wrestler. So that's another factor. How's that all going to work for this match?
Well, Mace, we've already seen. I mean, we've had a former Jersey Shore person who's now pregnant. Congrats, Angela Pava, whatever the heck your name is. Nobody cares. You know, get involved. I mean, is this, if you're booking this match, I know you don't want to book this match. Is this Karen doing the whole thing that Michael Cole should have done at Mania, going like, I don't want any part of you. Oh, you're down. Cool. I'll come in. Kick once. All right. I'm out of the ring again. I mean, I can't see Karen Angle taking bumps. This almost would have seemed better if you had had Velvet Sky, as everybody seemed to think, Mace, that she would have fit better into this role, because at least she is a very decent wrestler and could probably carry Karen Jarrett through a match. Do we trust? I mean, like Jim just said, Joni Lauer hasn't been in the ring in God knows how long.
Well, the only thing that I know for sure, well, not really for sure, but I'm willing to take bets on, what condition will Joni Lauer be when she rocks up? Will she be better or worse than Jeff Hardy?
That would be an ultimate tag team right there, I think. Have Jeff Hardy and Joni Lauer and Sean. Well, I was
losing all our connection.
Sean Waltman probably won't be back now, because if you watch the Yusha DVD, he doesn't have much love for Joni Lauer. But I mean, this is it. I know I'm breaking a precedent shock on 100 episode. I can do it for the one time, fine. I mean, this just bothers me that you're bringing in someone again. This, I know I've harped a bit on the WCW sticks. I'm going to use it again. This almost heaps of telling your entire knockout roster, none of you amount to crap. So we're going to bring in someone who hasn't done jack crap in the business for 6-7 years and give all of your paychecks to her. That's almost how this feels like, Jim.
They have, how many times have they done this though, where they just keep bringing people in and sort of putting their other talent to the side? And it really hasn't, I mean, it really hasn't pushed them to, when WWE brought The Rock back, at least you could say, look how many more percentages. Forget about, we know that a lot more people watch WWE than TNA, but just go by percentages. Look at how much of a percentage the increase was when you brought someone like Rock back to WWE compared to when they're bringing some of these other people that haven't been there, haven't been involved in a while, or they make the jump, the switch, and there really hasn't been much of an increase at all. So are you doing it because you want to grow the company, or are you doing it to shock people, or are you doing it to amuse yourself? And that's the thing I think sometimes gets lost, because I can't speak for any of them, but in my mind, it's like, well, some of these things, it seems like they're just doing it to amuse themselves. And if that's the case, that's not smart business, I don't think. I mean, you've got to, there are situations I think they do things to amuse themselves. And if they're the ones that are writing, putting the stories together, that's all good and well, but does it really help the company?
And Charlie Sheen coming in would make more sense than this at this point, Mace.
I mean, that's
true.
Definitely winning. And the Tiger, you could sell the Tiger Blood on Spike TV. It would be awesome.
I'm surprised they didn't go that route, actually, now that you said that.
I mean, come on, Law and Order Criminal Intent had Jay Moore playing him as a Charlie Sheen-like character. So, I mean, why not have Sean Waltman come in and do the role? He'll be winning on
maybe, hey,
levels.
You know what? Maybe they're setting something up for that. How about that? Maybe they are going to bring Sean Waltman in. They're trying to do it. Because that's been a while since those two have had all their troubles. Maybe this is all setting up something for him to come back into the company and all. If that's the case, I mean, I could see why they would be doing this, but still, I would be like, yeah, but are people really interested with all this? I just think there's a lot more talent there that they could work with and do things with, and a lot more other female talent they could bring in. I mean, yeah, China has a name from the past. People know her, but you know what? How many old fans are watching any of this stuff? I don't know. I don't know if that's even the case, that, you know, a lot of China fans are going to come back. You know, when they say that, when they bring someone else back in, well, we're going to get their fan base that they had. Well, you know what? Maybe their fan base that they had aren't watching it anymore and don't want to watch her or whoever. And not to just knock on her, because, you know, that's not totally the whole picture with this. But just in general, when they do something like that, well, maybe we'll get their fan base back. And again, I know I'm going to go back to Rock because that's the only example I really have right now that I could go to. When you bring someone like that back and see what kind of numbers they draw, or even the first night Hogan came back or came into TNA, and that night they had a pretty good boost in numbers, and then it went down after that. But at least you're saying, hey, we're bringing this guy back or this person back, and look at the numbers and look what the percentages did of what we were able to do. I think with bringing China in, I'm not going to see that. I'm just not going to see that. So then it's like, well, what are we doing this for? Are we doing it to shock everybody? Are we doing it to amuse ourselves? Or are we doing this for business? Well, if someone's asking me that question and I'm saying, well, when I look at that whole situation, I think it's more for the amusement of what they're doing, more so than the business or even the shock value for that matter. And bringing a RVD back was more of whoa, you know, that's pretty good. It's a little bit of shock, a surprise. Okay, I could see that. That's interesting and all. But going with this, I don't look at it that way. I just look at it as them amusing themselves with this whole angle and all.
Yeah, Jersey Girl in our chat room brought up. Go ahead.
Like, you're speaking about bringing people back in. You know, I just had this thought while you were saying it, you know, try and recapture your fan base. If they didn't just use it with that whole Madison Rayne defeating past knockouts thing, I would have laughed my ass off if Kurt Angle was like, and my mistress, and out comes ODB.
That would have been funny.
I
would have been good. That would have been good.
Because you think about it. Karen's doing this sort of queen gimmick thing, you know, the whole prim and proper and
lean all that. Out, brother.
What better to do the polar opposite than bring ODB back?
And
plus,
OD.
It would make sense. It would be ODB
oh,
to
yeah.
drop the horse shit on her.
Yeah, ODB would, and ODB would be able to work with her too and help her out as well because she's been wrestling. So that does make a lot more sense. But then again, when have things in wrestling made sense all the time? So.
Jersey Girl in our chat room brought up when we mentioned Joni Lauer said, is RVD going to pass her the bong? Hey, let's not bring the 420 man into this. He's too busy getting lost in the shuffle right now like everybody else is. And it just irks me. And it was the WWE conference call this past week that some fan brought it up in there asking him and it almost sounded like Crackhead Bob from the Howard Stern Show or somebody else saying that when are you going to buy that three-letter organization out of Nashville? It's like just in the, unless they're not watching. Because if they were, they'd be sitting there going to Janice Carter, who now has the pay book. We'll give you $1.50 for it. We'll take it off your hands and
$1.50. That's more than what he bought WCW for.
He bought it for a cup of coffee off of Ted.
He's not going to buy TNA. At least WCW had name recognition going back from the NWA and then turning into WCW and it being owned by Ted Turner. And he's going to be able to buy out his biggest rival that beat him. For however many weeks or months that they beat his company, and now he's got the hammer, and he could buy them, like you said, for very cheap, a cup of coffee, basically. And that was a big thing. Him buying TNA, what is that? TNA never, you know, they've never been able to go on WWE's level. So even to bring that up, like, oh, well, he'll just buy out. He's not even going to buy it. He's just going to wait it out. And just whenever TNA goes, they go. And that's going to be
the end of that. You know what Vince would get if he bought TNA? Half of his fired roster back.
Yeah, right. That's
pretty
right. Half of his roster that he fired, that he got rid of, would be back.
And bring in the knockout so they can get fed to Karma and get implant bombed out of the ring.
Hey, at least they know how to take it.
Yeah, in our remaining moments here, I'm glad Jim called in because for fans that are aware of it, he does work for the Miami Herald and he's been covering wrestling for the longest time. With this issue this past Sunday with the Osama bin Laden stuff coming out like it did now with the social networking thing like crazy, it harkens back to a night in December 8th of 1980 when your Miami Dolphins were playing on Monday Night Football.
Right.
Against the New England Patriots, and unfortunately Howard Cosell had the hardest job in the world in telling them that the beloved John Lennon was taken out the way he was. And is it just amazing to you that you look back at 1980 and you flash forward to this and people, we were sitting here watching the pay-per-view and Sir Rock and our executive producer is saying MSN is saying Barack Obama's going to be talking at 10:30, and I was like, okay, maybe he's going to talk about the pay-per-view. Maybe it's Gaddafi,
right? That's what I thought. That's the first one I saw that. I said, oh, because the day before in Libya, they had just NATO had just killed his son, so I figured, something happened with Gaddafi in Libya. Either someone took out Gaddafi or Gaddafi retaliated. Something major happened like that. I wasn't even thinking. About bin Laden, and then obviously the reports came that it was all bin Laden's dead, and then they start talking about everything there and all. But it's, you know, you said that about like when John Lennon had died and Howard Cosell, and they were in the heads. They just did something several months ago. I guess maybe it was the anniversary, because I remember reading or hearing about that on the radio too. And they were talking about how they were saying, should I say something? And Howard Cosell is, let me tell them, let me do this, let me tell everyone what is happening. And they had to do that in a game that went into overtime. And then, but there have been incidents. Remember the earthquake in the World Series?
The 88 World Series.
Right. And, Al Michaels did a great job as a reporter that day and filling everybody in what had happened and what is going on. That's something about a lot of the TV journalists. They, whether they're sports journalists or not, they have a good background. They have a good base as far as handling other things, other news type things and all. It was funny because the other night with Bin Laden, I guess Donald Trump had his Celebrity Apprentice show on.
Oh, yeah.
And they cut right. They had to cut, I guess, into that. And it's funny because Donald Trump is teasing running for president. And the day before was the National White House Correspondents' Dinner. And Barack Obama, he got up and told his, you know, some jokes. And he was joking on Donald Trump. And then all of a sudden, you know, a day or two later, they had to cut into Trump's Celebrity Apprentice show with this major announcement. And so some of the buzz on the internet was, oh, is this, you know, how the internet gets. So people are like saying, oh, that's why they did that at that time of night and why they told it and things like that. But it was an interesting time. And I saw how WWE, the night of the pay-per-view, John Cena got up and did his, made a speech. And then on Raw on Monday in Miami, it was a whole, it ended up being a Rock's birthday bash / USA Celebrate the Troops event that night, and having Lillian Garcia come back to sing the national anthem, The Rock leading everybody in the Pledge of Allegiance. And it just, it turned into that as well. WWE has always been pro USA and going over to Afghanistan and having shows there and supportive of the troops, the SmackDown Your Vote campaign and all. It's interesting how they bridge those different events together.
The column is based on MiamiHerald.com. Thanks for stopping by. I really appreciate you being here.
All right, everyone. Thanks, Alan. I'll talk to y'all later.
Take care. He is Jim Barcelona of the Miami Herald, and we thank him for being here with us. And I wanted to take these last couple moments. I promised I wasn't going to cry. I'm kidding. Like I said, 49 episodes ago, I got put into this chair. 50 episodes ago, I hung up on somebody, and I'm sure he's listening right now. So we don't miss you. I am one of the most happy people on this planet because I get to do this each and every week and get people like Sean Oliver, who out of the clear blue said, sure, J.J. Dillon, why not? And I got to give Spug and Mace a holy crap moment. So I know it sounds like ass kissing, and I really don't care at this point. It said Tim Stein and Sorokin and Spug that night that I hung up. And won an award for it. Thank you, WTR Awards. Talked me into doing this show after I had told Brad Dykens and Jason Dedrich I wanted nothing to do with it, and it was the greatest thing I ever did. In the closing moments here, since Spug has left, as I said, final score, Spug's kidneys won, his body, him nothing. Hopefully he'll tie the score up soon. To put you on the spot, Mace, of the 49 that we've done, is there a particular couple favorite interviews that you just were like looking at the bucket list going, I interviewed him. Awesome.
It's been a lot of very sort of sitting there going, holy crap, I'm actually hearing this voice on the phone and I can ask him any question I want. Oh crap, I have no questions. What the hell?
Well, Sorokin is sitting over there. I can give you a second or two to stall if you need it, and we can ask Sorokin his possible favorite moment, other than these guys possibly hanging up on me at some point.
Favorite moment? Steve Corino has been always a good guest to have on the show. Road Warrior Animal was really good. Jim Cornette, Touch Mantell, great interviews.
Yeah, we're hoping to have Jim Cornette back on during the next 100. We've already had talks with Sean Oliver on that one. Least favorite, obviously, would have to be the former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Colt Cabana. Thanks, Colt. We really love you.
No, Alan, no. He was great on the show. Why? He's given us endless amount of material.
Yeah, I know.
He did his job. He's given us material.
Basically, the big FU goes out to anybody who is political to us, who has dodged every question on the planet, aka Jerry the King Lawler.
Thanks, Jerry.
We like to have fun. We do have a reputation of asking the weird and wonderful questions, and we like that. But when you don't want to play ball, don't just glad hand us. You might as well not show up. If you don't think we're worth your time, say no. Even say no politely. That's fine. Don't come on the show, give us a bullshit interview, and then turn around and go, "Thanks, guys, it was great." Because then we just bash the crap out of you like we do now.
Yeah, and as I said, I had the opportunity to stay with the former regime's model of segment one, you do this, break. Segment two, you do this, break. Three, four, and so on. And that worked great for them. But I fortunately have a great group of friends outside of Spug Mace, Sirach, and like Phil Strum, who I've known since my days living in New York, who introduced us to Kevin Scott, who's now in our credits. We wish Jamal was here, but unfortunately, final score, Jamal's medication won, Jamal nothing. That also led to Anthony Castellano of Newsday, my hometown newspaper. Jim Barcelone have known going on. I've actually never met Jim. That's the most horrible part of this. I've had Jim on this whole past year, and I've only talked to him online and through emails, but through connection through TNA Wrestling, I've known him, and that led us to Scott Fishman, which, thanks to KFib Commentaries and Mason and everyone DVDs, has gotten us Sean Oliver multiple times. And as I said, friendships with Sean McCaffrey and WSU have led to some great stuff. That'll also happen possibly going to June when they go towards Uncensored Rumble, which is always one of their big events. Steve Corino has mentioned, he'll be back around the All-Star break in Major League Baseball to see if his predictions came true. And, believe he just won the WWC Championship in Puerto Rico again. Unless I misread his Facebook page on that one. And it's been a ton of fun for the last 49, and hopefully everybody stays with us going forward, because it's a lot of fun to have these people come in. I forgot to mention Sarah and Ari Diagon again for them being here. Before we go, I gotta bring up that UFC event, because unfortunately, final score, internet connection won me nothing. I got to miss the main event, which was George St. Pierre? Is that the proper pronunciation, yes. Or is it Georgia St. Pierre?
George St. Pierre.
George St. Pierre. Oh,
Spuggy. George Rush St. Pierre.
Yes, George St. Pierre defeated Jake Shields in the main
GSP
event.
Or God works really well.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Randy Couture met the Mr. Miyagi Daniel crane kick of all things to take him out. Mm-hmm. And of course, unfortunately, everybody
skills one, everybody else zero.
Yeah, and of course, everybody goes, "That's so Steven Seagal," and I'm sitting there going, "You dumbasses, Seagal
no.
has nothing to do with that."
No. Who was the first one to say that was the crane kick out of Karate Kid?
I mean, you.
That would be me.
Oh, of course.
Mind you, Joe Rogan says it 10 seconds after Spug did, so Joe Rogan likes listening to us.
Joe Rogan does like listening to us.
Yeah, and did we ever get photos of if that welt on that young chap ever went down on
his Hominick, head? Mike Hominick?
Oh, that was brutal. That was one of the more interesting things.
Growing an extra head out of his forehead.
I was on MMA Live, wrestlingtalk.com today, reading the medical suspension lists. Him and GSP both have 60-day medical suspensions.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, after the Velasquez fight, Brock Lesnar got a 90-day medical suspension.
That is crazy.
Mm-hmm. The hematoma is what they were calling them.
Yeah, hematoma.
On how
now, when is their next event? Is the next one 1:30?
1:30, May 28th.
Oh, it's May 28th, okay.
May 28th. The three main fights on the card are Frank Mir versus Roy Big Country Nelson, which is a heavyweight fight. Light heavyweight fight of the Baby Eater, Quentin Rampage Jackson, versus Matt the Hammer Hamill, and I'm kind of rooting for Matt Hamill, as I've said many times, I know him. And then your main event, which I swear to God, Alan, if this ends in a draw, you're done.
I thought it was
because
done.
The last time we saw this fight of Gray Maynard versus Frankie Edgar, it ended in a draw, and you were with us. Mm-hmm. And I really want to see an ending to this feud. So.
Well, it's in a steel cage. You're going to get an ending. God,
There better be a payoff.
Yeah.
No run-ins by the truth?
Yeah, no. I can see you sliding some knucks in there going, for God's sake, end it!
But it's Edgar versus Maynard 3. And then Stefan Struve is fighting on this card, Mace.
Stefan Struve, yes!
Big, lanky behemoth that he is.
When's my boy Sofriopoulos on it?
1:32 is Sofriopoulos is fighting. UFC 1:32, which is one in July, I believe.
Okay. Because they were teasing a lot of events between breaks there. They were teasing that. They were teasing Strikeforce. They were teasing a whole bunch.
Well, 1:31 is in June, and that is Junior Dos Santos versus Brock Lesnar.
And that'll be interesting.
That's going to be a really good fight.
Shooting star presses off the top of the cage.
Well, the thing is that, you know, everybody talks about how hard Cain Velasquez can hit. Dos Santos can hit harder than Cain Velasquez. Like, Dos Santos might as well have two diesel trains for fists. I mean, he hits hard. So, I'm really kind of interested to see how Brock's going to do. I think Brock's going to win, though. I really do. I think Brock's going to win that fight.
Lots and lots of good fights coming up, and you'll hear them live.
Hear them here.
Yep.
And I was talking to a buddy of mine who trains at Evolve Gym over in Akron, and I believe he said was Couture? There's some sort of affiliation that they have with Couture's gym, that Couture was going to be coming in for a guest trainer session. And he was going to try for me and for us to see if we could get, like, 10 minutes with Randy Couture.
Hey, why not?
So.
The Terry Funk of MMA? No problems.
I wouldn't mind interviewing Couture.
Yeah, I got shut out by him a while back.
You got to have the connections.
I know, Barbara Streisand. You're people who know people.
Gotta have the connections.
Hey, thanks to connections is how we got J.J. Dillon on here tonight. So, if you listened because of J.J. Dillon and you stayed with us through this whole program, yes, we normally do 3 hours, depending on material. Certain people don't like that, namely my bosses. And all the wrestling radio, they're like, be consistent, damn it. I'm like, sorry. Wednesday nights on this same network, these two gentlemen are joined by the Omega for Utaku Talk Live, which is...
Hold on.
What?
Otaku. Not Utaku.
Otaku.
Otaku. Otaku.
Otaku.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, he's not on this network anymore. I wish he had his show still here, but he doesn't. Preview of tomorrow night's proceedings, if you got one, gentlemen.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
Possibly that Bin Laden guy?
I think we're going to bring him up.
Including the dead guy on Twitter talking for him.
Well, at this point in time, all I can say about Otaku Talk Live is I won't be on it this week, as I'm taking my little brother to see Walking with Dinosaurs live.
Oh, you're going to that tomorrow, huh?
Yes. Jeez. I didn't realize that it was at the same time as OTL, so...
That's cool.
I won't be there. I have passed all my news stories over to Omega, who shall bring them forth.
So old school OTL tomorrow night.
Probably, yeah. Oh, by the way, the guy who's doing the Osama Bin Laden Twitter is a year too late, by the way.
Shame, isn't he?
No. Ask Rock.
Oh, boy, that's not even
after you.
I did an Osama bin Laden Twitter account about a year ago that actually got some following for a little bit before I stopped tweeting. I'm not even kidding.
Oh, we believe you. This Saturday night and every Saturday night, midnight-ish, is CB Radio with Sir Rockins, our friend Subway, and the godfather of extreme, Rob Parks.
This Saturday we'll find out how drunk he was, how hungover he was, how he enjoyed the strip club and other bars he attended on his birthday bash last Saturday night, and all the weird, wacky
Rob news. Parks?
Yeah. So we'll have
he was
all
at
that.
Bars, we didn't get an invite?
No, bastard. No, we didn't get an invite, but we'll hear all about this Saturday and all the wacky and weird that we can cover. Midnight-ish, I'll talk radio.
Yep, and Russ Talk Radio this Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern. Mace mentioned it earlier with our interview with J.J. Dillon. If you want to go ahead and tell everybody the new roundtable great debate issue, if they were not tuned in, which... You better be tuned in if you want to be a part of wrestling. You need to listen to Wrestle Talk Radio and All I Want of Wrestling Radio. So pontificate on your next great debate.
Yes, the next in the line of the WTR great debates will be the greatest manager of all time. We are finalizing the brackets as we speak. And, well, what better way to sort of start off than to try and get some recommendations from J.J. Dillon himself. So tune in, I believe we're on 10 p.m. this week as there's no pay-per-view on Sunday night right here on wildtalkradio.com for WrestleTalk Radio.
Yep. And as said, episode 100, I didn't want to make a big deal about it, but the more I thought about it, it was like, hey, this is pretty cool. Do I get a syndication deal like all those TV shows do? That's like the main goal.
It's essentially been 2 years that OWW has been on the air in one form or another. And it's been a year that, I mean, almost a year to the day that I've been with you. And it's been quite a fun ride. I will say that. So congratulations to us on episode 100.
Yeah.
We be awesome, yo. You got different. We tell you to go fuck yourself.
So, as always, thanks to everyone who listened in here. If you liked what you heard and you want to tell your friends about it, we're here each and every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Go to iTunes.com. You can download this and any of the other 99 that were before this. You can go to Click Wrestle. You can go to Wrestle Talk Radio. On Movie Soundtrack Night, I know these guys wanted something else to play it out, but I want to play it out with... an instrumental that a lot of people had to deal with once again with the stupid crazy frog thing. But he's an Academy Award winner named Harold Faltermeyer.
Gonna play the crazy frog version.
No, God, no. We're gonna play the original off one of the best soundtracks in music history, Beverly Hills Cop. It's Axel F. I'm out of here.